Welcome aboard, you people. It is a Starship Rokan show. Off for another day of broadcast insolence. You know, this show was once known as the Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis. Now, Anna DeVlantis has her own show that precedes this one from 1 to 3 p.m. And we were radio partners for 4 years, a little bit more than 4 years.
Had a good run.
Yeah, it was very fun. She has, you know, moved on to her own show. Now, as I just mentioned, now the point here is that we still like to get together, you know, as a show, because we did a lot of stuff together socially as a show over those years.
Uh-huh.
Sort of legendarily, did we not, Kevin Powell?
We did.
Who's been doing sports on this show for approximately the same amount of time.
That is correct. And last night we decided to have a family reunion and go out and enjoy a few adult beverages together.
Yeah.
One, not my fault that the bartender was filling my glass with ice cold beer. That was delicious.
Yeah.
Not my fault.
No.
So I do apologize.
Although
I recall
being at the bar and witnessing the bartender say, "Would you like another?"
Well, that's a good point.
I do recall that. Yeah.
And from what I recall, I believe I said, yes, I would like another. I would love another, actually.
Yes, I think that's exactly what you said.
So I would like to apologize for my rantings and some moments I had last night.
I was
venting. You vent to the people you love most, guys, your family. So I vented to you.
Hey, venting's fine. Maybe just not at level 11, maybe at like a 3.
Again, not my fault the glass was filled with beer the entire time. Now, for me, the real adventure started after, because folks, you drink, you drive, you lose. So I took the old UP Northwest home out to Mount Prospect last night on the Metra. Got home, relaxing on the couch, watching TV, thinking about the idiotic things I rambled to Ro, Lauren, and Anna at the bar, and all of a sudden it set in, the panic moment.
Ooh.
I go, oh no, Kevin, you idiot. My bag. Where is it? Where is my bag with my laptop and my recorder and my WGN microphone? Where is it?
That is a radio geek kind of moment right there.
Yes.
Where's my mic flag? I lost my mic flag.
So anyway, the panic sets in.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Did I leave it in the Uber? Did I leave it on the train? I don't know. And as the moment was setting in, probably about 12:30 at night, phone rings. I go, this has got to be the guy. Somebody found my bag. I answer it. Is this Kevin Powell? This is Kevin Powell. How are you, sir? He goes, I'm just fine this evening. I believe I have your bag. I go, yes. Ooh. Metra engineer, shout out to Metra.
Nice.
Went, found the bag at the end of the night. Somehow tracked down my phone number, because he must have saw I had some stuff in the bag with my name on it. Saw the WGN situation. Reached out to me, called me, settled me down. Because, again, I was ranting. So I started ranting to him when he called me as well.
Hey,
and another thing, I was just still in Rome about this. So,
you know what my rent is every month? And I explain what goes on. You know, I got friends who are making $250,000 a year and scams. Something like that.
He was like, okay, that's all good and well, sir, but I have your bag. I'm like, that's amazing. He's like, he went out of his way, and then I'm texting with him. He put it at a super secure spot at the Metra station, so I took the train in today, got my bag. Shout out to Tim from Metra, saving my night.
There you go.
So it ended. It was a wild one for me, at least.
Bar. No. We all know it was a wild one for you.
You guys probably know better than
I do. There was a moment where, you know, sometimes people just get a little, like, they get tired, as Coach Ditka used to call it. They get a little tired. They get a little cranky.
Yeah.
And that was what Kevin, and like, we don't even really recall, because Lauren was in deep conversation with Anna, and I was watching TV, and the next thing you know, Kevin is responding to something that it wasn't even said by anybody. Ah, come on.
Yeah, you know, no, he got to the point where he was like, oh, whatever. Well, whatever. Like, he wouldn't even continue with the argument. Just whatever. I'm leaving.
There was no argument. Yeah. It was all in his head.
He's just saying.
Yeah, I know. You know what? It's a stressful time.
I'm sorry, guys.
The holidays, you know, right after the holidays for everybody, you know, you're sort of letting down, and you're like, now he's hunkering down for, like, the long winter ahead, and it's, you know, it's still dark outside, and Christmas lights are gone. You know, so I get it. I understand.
I think there might be a bit of hangry moments going on last night as well.
Yeah, we didn't really eat dinner. But you're fine. Your bag's fine.
Michael,
it all worked out.
Right here,
and he wanted to make the full apology to me and Anna and Lauren. So
I apologize.
Thank you
to Metro.
Very well done. All right, let me tell you what's coming up on the program. Joe Donlan's going to join us from the WGN-TV newsroom coming up in just a moment. Bill Brady, who is a state senator, he is actually the minority leader. And Springfield, Illinois, Spring Patch, as some people call it. The This is kind of wild. First of all, you got the email discoveries, right, that are going on. But there is a piece of legislation revolving around the marijuana that you might want to know about. We'll talk to him about that. That's also coming up. That's coming up in the right after the bottom of the hour news. And also, Dr. Kevin Most is going to be here this hour as well to talk about the flu season, because it is in full swing now in Chicago. And you did hear the tragic news that we've had our first pediatric death in the state of Illinois as a result of the flu. So we'll tell you how to stay safe there. And stay safe from coyotes a little bit later on in the program. But first, and cougars, which I've never been able to stay safe from, here is Lauren Lapka. It's a new year. Maybe it's time for a new SUV. Apple Chevrolet in Chicagoland's SUV headquarters with the area's largest inventory of Chevy SUVs. And what a lineup. Whether it's a new Suburban, the Tahoe, the Traverse, the Equinox, the Trax, or the all-new Chevy Blazer. Maybe the greatest SUV ever invented by any human being. I can't speak for Martians or Plutonians or any of those people, but I can just tell you right now that on the planet Earth, no better SUV than the Chevy Blazer has ever been designed, built, and executed. Right now, you're going to get 0% financing on select Chevy models or $3,750 in total cash on most of the 2020 Chevy Equinox models. That's your choice, whatever you want to do there. AppleChevy.com is where you start this whole thing. You go to the new vehicle section, and then you go down to SUV, and you take a look at the inventory. That inventory gets updated every couple of hours, so you know exactly what they have. You can even call them, go, hey, I want that one. Put it on a hold up right there. Apple Chevrolet, 8585 West, 159th Street in Tinley Park. Happy New Year from John Alfirovich and his entire team at Apple Chevy. Find new roads.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Mike and Matera, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Joe Donlin is joining us right now from the WGN Television Newsroom.
Wow, thanks for that plug, Kev.
You got it, Joe. That's what I'm here for.
I'm glad to hear this works. I'm just assuming the button that says mic on, that's what I need, right?
Yes.
This is working?
Yes. You see, that's the difference between television, the powdered princes of television, and we working stiffs here in radio, is that we have to press all of our own buttons and understand what everything does. You just arrive, you take your cape off, and you throw it over the bust of Ron Majors that is in the corner of your office, and then you have people do your nails, right?
Fanning with the leaves, right? Red grapes.
Right, and then they place the earpiece in your ear and drape it around and dress it, you know, through your back. And then he puts his arms out and they put his coat on. It's a beautiful, I've seen it. It's a beautiful thing that they do with Joe Donlin.
Speaking of which, yeah. I've got a massage here in 10 minutes. Can we speed this up?
Right. By the way, the pineapple seems just a little, I think you're cutting it too close to the rind. All right. Let's talk about a number of the things that are happening right here in our fair town. First of all, let's just start very quickly. This email that emails that have now surfaced that were flying around during the Quinn administration have some pretty damning things in them.
Yeah, props to WBEZ. They found these emails, and they're serious and disturbing and, sadly, I would say, not surprising, right? Would you agree with that, Ro?
No. That's the unfortunate part of this.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that there was someone who kept their mouth shut about a rape downstate in Champaign and also kept his mouth shut about ghost workers. I mean, the ghost workers enough would be enough, you know, troubling enough or enough for an investigation. But to hear about this potential rape that was silenced, I mean, these are things that...
And the idea here, and let's just give a little color to this, that the idea was that these emails were trying to indicate, hey, we should keep this guy around because he's a good guy because he keeps his mouth shut,
right.
Essentially, is what that email exchange specifically about the guy who knew about a rape. It wasn't he who perpetrated it, but he knew about it and he kept it quiet because he didn't want it to, you know, to spill out, you know, for the, whether it was the actual person who, you know, the political ramifications of it, essentially. And well, that's just crazy.
And the takeaway today, I would say, is that most of these players are still around and everyone knows who they are. So House Minority Leader Jim Durkin asked for hearings to get the relevant players to testify under oath. And as of right now, no one's talking to BEZ or anyone else. But I would imagine these are going to be easy enough questions to answer once they get these relevant players in to testify.
Yeah. Well, let's see. You know, Springfield has had its ability to insulate itself from these things forever and ever and ever and ever, right? And this McLean guy, where these emails centered around, you know, he is basically the centerpiece of whatever is going to happen to the Speaker of the House here legally. So that's interesting.
Right. Well, he was a longtime friend of Madigan. But I wonder, Ro, do you think this is sort of the opening to something much bigger that we've seen unfolding here recently?
You know, with all due respect to WBEZ and the work that they put in defining this, I have found throughout, as I'm sure you have, Joe, when you're doing an investigation, you generally find a cohort inside the system who helps mm-hmm. you, who guides you through, because there's no way that they're going to read every email that was ever dropped. So there's either somebody in the prosecutorial world who wants this out, or there's somebody else who's going to, that tipped, because it's all on tips. It's not like, you just make that up and you go, oh, you know what we should look at is this tranche of emails. Mm-hmm. There's generally some help in that.
You think somebody flagged the one that
yes.
caused all the problems?
Yes. And then and WBEZ, through their these reporters who were able to get this mm-hmm. through their connections and through the trust that they had built with whatever these sources are, were able to break this story. And that's interesting to me, because when I see something like this happen, and I don't know any of the specifics of how the reporting was done, but when I see big stories like this drop out, I think, okay, now who benefits from this story being out right now? That's a question that I think we should always ask ourselves. Yeah. Who's the winner when that comes out? And in often cases, it's the prosecutors, like the federal government, right? Because they want it out there because that creates public pressure. I know. Hard to believe that the FBI or DOJ or anybody else would drop information out just to try to smoke somebody. But I believe it has happened.
Well, we've seen in plain writing here what's being alleged, even in this email. How far does this go, do you think, Ro, as far as whether it involves Governor Quinn, who can say, I didn't know anything about it, Mike Madigan, who says, I didn't know anything about it? Do you think this goes beyond what we're hearing?
Okay, so the answer to that question is when if you're Governor Quinn, you're stopping, you're thinking, oh my God, did I know about that? That's the first thing you stop and think about.
Or because these emails went to his aides.
Right. Did anybody say anything to him? Or is there anybody who's going to say that they said something to him? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's where it all sort of starts to fall apart.
Right.
I never really got the sense that Pat Quinn was under any kind of continuing investigation for anything that was going on in his office. I never got the sense that they're going after him for all of that stuff, because Quinn was the most unlikely governor in a lot of ways. He'd run for it a lot, and he always was sort of a gadfly, right? He started with the Commerce Commission, worked his way around, and he always looked like your sophomore history teacher in high school, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of what he always had, that professorial or teacher like pallor about him. And I know that Blagojevich, by having him as the lieutenant governor, Blagojevich was very would often publicly say to people, "He's my insurance policy against impeachment." Mm-hmm. so he's sort of an unlikely guy, and I never got the sense that he was innately corrupt. I think he was innately not good at his job. And he and I have discussed that publicly, and he's not happy when I say that. but I don't see that going in his direction. Now, does this put more pressure on other people to flip on Madigan? Maybe. I don't know. But that's when you have a bombshell set of emails come out that have these kinds of fiery allegations in them, or fiery narrative of, we're trying to cover up a rape, or they're trying to cover up a guy, ghost payrollers and stuff like that. And hey, don't tell nobody. This is, this is a good guy because he don't tell nobody. He doesn't talk. That's that, heads will roll. There will be people who will have to pay the political and maybe even the legal price.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we got that. Now, the weed boxes at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
We came up with an idea here. I know you guys are doing this story tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get the pictures. This is where you show up at O'Hare, and you're going to get on a flight, and then you got pot on you, and you're like, oh, I'm going to land in a state that doesn't have legal marijuana. I've got to leave it here. Like your water bottles.
Yep.
And, maybe your nail clippers or whatever it is.
Right.
And I believe.
Your Glock.
You're right. That happens too.
Oops.
Yeah. And it's better for you to find it and hand it to the guys than for them to find it. But as you're going through, we came up with an ingenious solution. For those who are traveling to a state that has legal marijuana, and they say that they're not, they're supposed to stop you with it. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a dime. You know, like you go to the 7-Eleven and they got that little dish down there.
Yeah. If you need a penny, take a penny.
Right. Need a penny, take a penny. Need a dime, take a dime. You leave a dime bag, and then when you land in Portland, you pick up a dime bag
there
on that end.
There you go.
How
I
about
like
that?
It's sort of like that, you know, that service where you could rent DVDs when you got on the plane, and then you turn the DVD when you landed.
Right, exactly. Right? Exactly right.
Perfect.
Right, this is pot just for the plane.
I was thinking, actually, as a public service, I was unclear what that box was, so I thought they needed to put a sign on the box, and I've come up with a few signs here. Like, one of them would be, think before you board your plane, here's where you drop your Mary Jane. Right? So that makes it clear to everyone that this is what this is for. You can drink beer, vodka, even gin, but leave the Chiba in the amnesty bin. You want one more?
Yeah.
Your jet can fly fast like supersonic, but it's not a good idea to fly with the chronic.
I am loving all these gadgets. Okay.
I actually like the chronic one.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. Did you hear the Potillos thing?
Yes.
Can we Colbert play that again? That? Can we play that again?
This is absolutely
one of my favorite things that Stephen Colbert has ever done. This is Tuesday night. They ran a commercial, because now that weed is legal in Chicago, they ran a commercial for a new weed restaurant.
Are you craving some Chicago-style marijuana? Then come on down to Potillo's on South Pulaski.
Hello, I'm Fat Al.
And I'm Southside Donnie.
Potillo's, where you can get a brat with some pot. Like our char cheddar Polish joints, smothered in cheese and topped with sweetened hot peppers.
Or try a slice of our deep dish kush, a butter crust, 6 inches of cheese and sauce, and some Primo Chronic.
We also have a large selection of water pipes.
Da bongs.
So come on down to Potillo's.
For Chicago style, wacky tobacky, come to Potillo's on South Pulaski.
Hey, don't bogart that dog.
That's low-hanging fruit for Colbert.
Yeah, I suppose it is. But it's just, as a Chicagoan, it makes me happy. I wonder, around the nation, when they saw that, they're like, are they really going to do that? Because you can see, you know, they're going to start adding it to food at some point, right? That's like the next iteration of this, cocktails and food.
Well, I'll tell you, having spent some time in Portland, It's really strange to drive down streets in areas where all you see are these green plus signs. And they're like 7-Elevens. You see them everywhere. And that's what's going to happen around here. And it just becomes something else you see on the street. As unusual as it seems, it takes some getting used to, but you're going to see them everywhere soon.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have to explain to the 4-year-old what that is.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, kid. It's nothing. It's like, you know, like when dad goes to the bar, you know, it's like that.
Yeah.
So,
hey, what do you make, speaking of which, of Juliana Stratton going to the first dispensary and getting some edibles and saying, hey, it's legal now? I wasn't sure about the optics on that.
Yeah, I think it's just like, hey, remember me? I'm the one who always made the big speeches. I'm the lieutenant governor, and I made the speeches that were twice as long as the governor the nights that we won. Remember me? Actually, I think that the Governor Pritzker would be well off to keep her stoned. Right? Because that'd be the best way to do it. All right. You can see Joe Donlan on the WGN-TV News starting tonight. There's a 4, there's a 5, there's a 6, there's a 9, there's a 10, and he's on almost all of those.
Well, all of them tonight because Ben's on vacation. Hey, guys, March 26th is the Sox home opener.
We'll be there with you.
All right. I'll see you there.
Okay. See you then. Let's check in now. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. Don't forget, keep listening after 5:30. Your chance to win a pair of tickets. See Supertramp's Roger Hodgson perform live at Silver Creek Event Center, Fort Wynn's New Buffalo, Saturday, February 22nd. That's a 9 o'clock Eastern show, 8 o'clock Chicago time. But if you're coming out of Chicago or Northwest Indiana where you're on the Central time and you got to get over to the Eastern time, you just always got to remember that. That is a pro tip and a rookie mistake that people make.
Plan ahead situation.
Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster, Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. All right, Bill Brady is with us. He is the minority leader of the Senate in the state of Illinois down in Spring Patch. Let's talk a little bit. First of all, I need to get your reaction, Senator, to this story that has come out, these emails that were exchanged with Mike McClain. And in these emails, some really, really disturbing things. Basically, standing up for there's an appeal to stand up for a guy, not to let a guy get fired who apparently was aware of two criminal acts, one a criminal sexual assault and the other a ghost payroller situation. And because he was keeping quiet, they're like, hey, he's a good guy. Obviously, you've been around Springfield a long time, Bill. There's a lot of people of questionable morality and ethics that, you know, they've trotted those halls at the Capitol. But does this surprise you?
What has been reported is not only disgusting, but reprehensible. It does surprise me, but it's getting to where nothing surprised me. I think we have to remember there's a victim in this case, and we have to do everything we can to protect that victim. But I have authored a letter today that I am sending to the Director of State Police, and that I'm sending a copy to the governor and the other three legislative leaders, demanding or requesting that he open an investigation into this. We can't allow this to go uninvestigated. The truth needs to be known under all circumstances, and it seems like right now there's just too many ways to pass the buck, and I think the state police is the appropriate avenue, and as I'm sending him a letter today. But this is reprehensible. We can't lose sight of the fact that there's a victim in this sexual allegation, or rather referred to as rape. The other incidents of ghost payrolling is bad, not equally as bad in my mind. But anybody who knows anybody who's covered something up or done something at the expense of a victim of some predator needs to come forward and help bring to light justice in this case.
Well said. This is, I think, not a surprise to a lot of people who've been watching Springfield for as long, and just politics in the state of Illinois, city of Chicago, you know, writ a little smaller, but these are the kinds of things as the conspiracy of silence, guys going in, because there are a lot of people, and we're seeing it increasingly, and the federal government has been out trying to scoop some of these folks up, that treat government, whether it's municipal government, small municipal government, in some cases state government, they treat it like a mob cartel, right? They feel like it's one gigantic criminal conspiracy. And, you know, it's hard, right? I mean, the people who get voted in to go down there and do the right thing, and I count you among them, it's got to be really disheartening.
It is. And as I said, am I surprised? Yes, I've never seen anything I can recall like this. Very seldom do I call on the state police to investigate an action, but this needs to be dealt with, and the perpetrator here needs to be dealt with. It's the protection of the victim.
Yeah,
but the people of Illinois also deserve better, but more so we got to care for this victim of this horrific, reprehensible act.
Very quickly, before we let you go, the 2020 legislative calendar is starting now. What's going to get done here? Are we going to get online gambling in Illinois this year?
Well, I don't know about that. And as has been reported, I've got an interest in the gaming industry, so I'll accuse myself from those types of things. But I do think there are some important things that need to be done. We need to take seriously the burden that property taxes prey on the citizens of this state. We've got to grow our economy, and frankly, we've got to do everything we can to fend off this Democratic attempt to eliminate Illinois' constitutional fair tax provision, as the Democrats are trying to do. Now, we benefit from fair tax, a flat fair tax. It needs to be retained. It's a big issue for us because we know that the only way to solve Illinois' problems is more job opportunities for Illinois families, and you're not going to get that if you continue to threaten the people who create those jobs.
Senator, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Senator Bill Brady.
Springfield. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, sir. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies? Rob Kahn Show right here on 720 WGN. Dr. Kevin Moses joining us because flu season has arrived in Chicago and in Illinois. But in northern Illinois, it's hitting kind of hard. We saw this a couple of weeks ago at peak levels on the East Coast. And now, Kevin, it looks like it's moved out here.
Yeah, bro. Unfortunately, you're starting to see peaks almost across the entire country, but we certainly are seeing some big peaks now here in the Midwest, including, unfortunately, a pediatric death earlier today.
Right. The first one announced in the Chicago area.
Yep.
Let's talk about the different strains here, because people get very, very confused about the flu.
Yeah.
The most important things people need to know is there's a flu shot. Flu is not stomach flu. Flu is, although you can have gastric symptoms with it, but that's not what it is. It's a disease it's a condition that exists in the lungs, makes you super sick, high fevers, and can lead to some really bad complications.
Yeah, and you hit it right on the head. You know, a lot of people say, well, I didn't get the flu because I don't have nausea and vomiting. And like you said, it's not. This is an upper respiratory. It's almost all in the head, in the throat, and in the lungs. And we have different strains that attack us, you know. And so the flu vaccine, we try to make sure we get the right strains that we're hoping to hit for a certain year. And this year's just been kind of unusual, and more than kind of unusual, extremely unusual, which is making many experts feel it could be one of the worst flu seasons we have in decades.
So, but I hear conflicting reports about this. I hear that the flu vaccine is effective on one of the dominant strains here. It's working, but then it's not on another. Is that right? What do we know about this?
Yeah. So what happens right now is we try to see what's going on out there right now. And right now we have this type B, which is a Victoria strain. Very unusual. This time of the year, normally we have type A hitting, and then type B comes a little bit later. So type B making up about 75% of the cases right now. That type B is found in the vaccine this year. Not an exact match, but pretty close. The concern they're seeing is the nasty influenza A H3N2, which is the one that can really get into lungs and really do damage. The match doesn't appear to be as good as we want it to be. So the early match looks good, and we're concerned about the late match right now.
Okay, so as the season goes on, you mean? So right now, if you've had a flu shot, you can feel, although you still take all your precautions, wash your hands and all the rest of that. But you've at this point, having a flu shot is effective in this stage of the flu season. But once we head into February and March and into April, because it does go that deep, then this A type will become dominant.
Yeah, it's actually even worse than that. It's not even going to be February. If you look at the last 2 weeks' data, we're starting to see that the B is starting to wane a little bit, but the A is really starting to pick up. So we're hitting record numbers right now. We're hitting where we normally hit for our peaks for the entire year, but we're still continuing to see growth, and that growth, unfortunately, now has flipped from the B to the A strain.
Okay.
So we expect really here over the next few weeks that this could be an extremely dangerous time for those who have not been vaccinated.
All right. And the antiviral medications that people can take, Tamiflu, Relenza, the Zofluza or whatever they call that.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that stuff working?
Yeah, this year it is working quite well. If you remember in the past years, we've had some resistance rates of about 25-30%. This year it looks to be close to 99% for the strains that we're seeing right now, which is extremely encouraging. The thing that, Roe, that people need to understand, though, is if you didn't get the vaccine and you get influenza, in order to have those medications work, you really have to get in within those first 2 days of symptoms. So if you can't get into your doctor, get into the emergency room and urgent care, because the importance of starting those antiviral meds is so important to start them early to get the full benefit.
We actually have a texter asking, 309, they have a four-month-old at home. What's the best thing a parent can do for very young children?
Yeah, Lauren, that's a great question because, as everyone knows or may not know, we won't vaccinate anybody under the age of 6 months. So right now, the most important thing they can do is protect that child by making sure that they're not exposed to anybody. You know, at this time of the year, I would probably try to keep that child inside as much as they can and away from areas like grocery stores and things where we know that there's going to be a lot of people and the chance for exposure is very high. The immune system in that four-month-old is really coming from the mother and not from any vaccines. So that's the ones that we really want to protect, because that's where we're seeing our biggest issues are in young children and seniors.
So if the mother, is it coming through the milk of the mother? Or is it coming through the just the before born being inside the mother in the womb?
A little bit of both. So, you know, the mother that breastfeeds is certainly going to give her child antibodies and help that immune system. Not so much specific to influenza, unfortunately.
So, like, if the mom got vaccinated, she's not passing that safety along to the child.
Correct. Okay. And that's why we have vaccinated as early as 6 months, even, you know, while children are still being breastfed. We know that they're not going to get the immune response that we need. So that 6 month, you know, those are the kids that we really want to make sure that we're vaccinating.
And people can still get the flu shot here, right?
Yeah. You know, probably the big thing people need to understand is it takes 2 weeks to get its full effectiveness. So getting it now is kind of important, like immediately, because we're starting to say, like, we're starting to peak. Once you've been exposed and you have the symptoms, the vaccine does you no good whatsoever. So it really is the preventative portion of it to make sure that you can get it on as quickly as possible.
All right. This is always a scary time of year for hypochondriacs, because if you've had the flu, the real flu, because people go, yeah, the flu is no big deal. Anybody who ever says that to you did not have the real flu.
Correct.
When you have it, you know it, and then you're like, okay, it's like you want to invest in the flu shot business. You don't even just want to get a flu shot, because it does help. And another important thing to note here too, despite the fact that some of these, at least one of these viruses that's dominant this year, is not a perfect match for the flu vaccine. The fact that you have been immunized against both A and B strains of the flu, it does give you a certain amount of sort of umbrella coverage, if you will. The symptoms may be less severe, can be less severe because you've been vaccinated.
Absolutely. You'll have it for a shorter duration, and the symptoms will be a lot better. You know, the individual who hasn't been vaccinated, like you said, true influenza, you get that fever 103, 104, and someone feels like someone just hit you with a baseball bat all week. You know, that's the individual. The guy who gets a little bit of a cough and a sore throat and said, I had influenza, he really didn't. But you're absolutely right that even though the vaccine is not a true match almost any year, we know that we do get protection, and it decreases the symptoms and decreases the duration, which can be life-saving in some seniors and patients with COPD and diabetes.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, this is sphincter tightening time. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. This is what happens now for the next 2 months, and then you get past the peak. But and what's interesting is people around you start to go down. You know, all of a sudden you find out somebody in the office has the flu, and then I just put a plastic bag over my head.
Correct.
I get very worried about that. Don't touch buttons.
Right, and you have hand gel everywhere, and you're washing your hands, and you're coughing into your sleeve, and you're watching the people around you, that's for sure, which is important. You know, like I said, grocery stores, you go to the grocery store, you pick up that cart and start pushing around, and you have no clue who had it before.
Right.
If you pay with cash and you're getting money back, that money can have it. You know, there's
the keypad when you're putting your information in on the keypad. Right?
100%.
Yeah, that's like, okay, I know we got to go here, but when you go to like Walgreens or to CVS and you have to put to get a prescription, you have to put the last four digits of your phone number or whatever it is.
Yep.
I'm like, that keypad has got to be the most dangerous item other than an AR-15. I mean, it's got nothing but germs on it.
Especially if you think about where you're at.
Yeah, because there's like sick people touching right. that thing. All right. Right. Sorry, I hate to get all hysterical. Dr. Kevin Most, thank you very much, as always, for being with
us.
And remember this, better knowledge means better health for you and your family. Turn to Northwestern Medicine at nm.org/healthbeatnews for health tips, research, and more. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. Take care, Ro.
All right, you too. We will have the news, and we're getting you ready for coyote season right here in Chicago as well. We are in search.
I'm on your side. Won't you hang in there, brother? You're bound to survive.
We are in search of our own Wile E. Coyote here in Chicago.
Coyote Watch 2020.
Yep. You know what we need? We need Coyote Carl.
Yeah, we do.
Is what we need.
Alligator Bob's.
Yes, cousin.
Cousin.
But we are going to have Coyote Chris on coming up in just a few minutes. Chris Anker, who we've had on before when we've had these coyote problems. You know, the coyote problem is not new to Chicago. People will remember a decade ago when a coyote got loose in downtown Chicago. Not loose. I mean, it was
Roman.
It was already living here. It got loose. It was downtown. Went into a Quiznos, and then laid down in the cold case where you know where you get to the soft drinks and stuff.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean,
thought it was hiding.
I mean, just minutes ago, I saw another video of a coyote eating a squirrel.
Ew.
And it's right in front of somebody's home.
Well, at least
they're
it's
everywhere,
a squirrel,
bro.
But why are people filming that?
Why aren't they helping the squirrel? Is that what you're asking?
No, but why are you filming it? I know.
Because
coyotes are hot right now in Chicago.
Yeah.
Clearly.
You know you're going to get likes with a coyote.
Absolutely.
All right, so the coyote story is this. We did have a kid who got bit in the head by a coyote, a five-year-old, and was taken to the hospital and has been treated, and that's a serious injury. There's another man who claimed he was bit in the buttocks by a coyote. He has yet to have been able to confirm that to the police department, so we're taking that with a grain of salt. And then there's a story of coyotes surrounding a Sprint store in the West Loop. Now, I don't know. I mean, does Sprint have a special on right now? Why would they be doing that?
I don't know, but I read this to you not too long ago. Cook County Animal Care and Control encourages people to switch up their routine because coyotes are smart and can learn your schedule. So maybe they knew someone was working the 9 to 5.
At the Sprint store, I see coyotes as more of, you know, one of the, like, drop phone stores. You know, like the cell store.
Burners.
The burners.
Yeah. I don't see the coyotes going, you know what, I really need to package up for 2 or 3 years with Sprint. I think, oh, you know what, now, do I get the iPhone 10 with that?
Kind of sneaky around the corner in the alley making a call and then throwing the phone away.
Right, exactly. Oh, also, you need one that you can actually use your paw on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is the audio. CBS2 had this. This is the police dispatch audio concerning the coyote.
Got an adult male who was bitten by a coyote.
Over at Fullerton Parkway in Cannon, it looks like a coyote bit a little boy. And the coyote is still on the loose.
God.
I think my favorite tweet related to the coyote story right now is someone said, Kim's office already put that coyote back on the street.
It's true. Well, Channel 9 has this amazing video of the coyote just, you know, limping, had a bit of a limp, but just like literally looking for the light, crossing the street.
Yeah, went to the actual crosswalk.
Yeah.
Well, I remember 3 days ago, we were talking about the coyote. I think this was a Monday, and I had just seen a video somebody put on an Instagram story, and it was the coyote limping. So the thing's getting around. Mm-hmm. People are noticing this coyote.
So here's WGN photographer John Laboda confronted by a coyote by Northwestern Hospital.
Stay away. Get away.
Now, does it listen to that? Is that a burner phone? What is that? Is that a flip phone?
What kind of phone
Why do you have a flip phone? Oh, man. And then, of course, you know, this all started was on Monday, right, when we had the audio of the howling coyote in the backyard.
So the coyote was laying right here. It spent about, you know, 4 or 5 hours here sleeping yesterday. Same one, because it's common with the limp that everybody's been reporting.
I don't know, man. I hear that in my backyard, and I am hiding under the bed. And I don't think that's even... Now, the coyotes, you can't hunt them, right? They're protected.
Well, so it's they're not, but they are. So in the city, we were learning about this earlier, there's this coexistence plan. So you really should...
It's going great.
Yeah, you can't really touch them as long as they're doing damage, which obviously they need to get the one that's bitten this kid out. But in Illinois, coyotes can be hunted year-round except during firearm deer season, and only licensed deer hunters may take coyotes. So, you know, there's complications.
It's always complicated. All right, we're going to talk to a coyote... Chris, coming up right after we check in with Lauren. What's happening in the traffic and the weather? It's the Rokan Show right here. We've got coyote crisis here in Chicago. We have one coyote who's on the loose that has bitten a child in the head of all places.
Which apparently there hasn't been any kind of attack on a human in like over 30 years.
Well, Chris Anker is an expert in all of this. We've had Chris on before. He's a senior wildlife biologist at the Forest Reserves of Cook County and Urban Coyote Research Project. And Chris, thanks again for joining us. It is really unusual to get a bite. Does that indicate that maybe this is a wounded or sick animal?
It's totally unknown to us exactly what has occurred here. It's extremely unusual to have a bite situation. Any animal that's injured or sick could potentially be dangerous to a human. But the incidence of a coyote biting someone is incredibly rare. It has been documented in North America, but typically it's out west or up in the provincial provinces of Canada. And it always occurs in areas where people are actively feeding the coyotes.
Oh. So it's they come close and then... They are not very discriminatory, right, in terms of what they're looking at, because basically everything is a food source to them. I was reading something yesterday that's a little alarming. During mating season, basically, coyote males will go after each other, right, in terms of just trying to protect their own, whatever it is, their own range, because they're just interested in the females.
Correct. So in our area, coyotes actively protect a family group's territory. So you'll have a mated pair, maybe a few animals from the previous year, and then that year's pups. In the Chicagoland area, breeding season is around Valentine's Day, believe it or not.
Oh, that's romantic.
It actually peaks around Valentine's Day, which is kind of funny. But whoever is listening to this in the Chicagoland area is within the territory of some coyote family group.
Yeah, they're all over downtown. We've talked about this before. Do we call them dens?
It's downtown, but everywhere, yeah.
Packs, dens, what do we call the groups when they're together?
Family groups?
Yeah. Just family groups?
Yeah, we don't...
Because they're not
we
men.
Normally don't get... Right. We normally do not get packs building up in our area. Typically, packs, which are extended family groups, so it's probably related females bringing their family groups together, only occurs in areas of the northern Great Lakes where you get 20 inches of snow on the ground for 30 days or more, and then they're able to pack together these family groups, and then they're able to take down adult white-tailed deer. We do not get that kind of snow cover down here, so we don't see formal packs. What we see are the family group, the mated pair, a few of the animals from the previous year, and potentially the young of the year. So at any one time, you may have 2 to 7, 8 animals running around together.
How long do they mate for? Do they stay together for season after season after season, or is it just sort of one and done?
If nothing else happens, they will mate for life.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's meaning something happens, like one of them dies or the male, another male comes in and challenges the current male?
Typically, the pair will defend the territory. The alpha female is not a docile partner in this. She's very active at defending her territory and her situation.
Classic Chicagoan. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Kevin, that was your line.
Classic.
unless the insurgent male has a better job. I mean, that's the only reason
and
a boat, right? And White Claw. All right, so let's talk about the growth of coyotes in, and I'm saying coyotes. I don't know what to say. coyote, whatever. There seems to be more of them now. Is that true or not true?
Well, more of them now compared to when?
I like a decade ago, let's say.
There are a few more now, but not a lot. We saw our greatest growth during the 80s and early 90s, and since then it's relatively stable. There's been some moving around, but what we have seen is that not so much a change in numbers as we've seen a change in behavior. Because the animals are not hunted or trapped in the city of Chicago, what happens is they're intelligent enough to realize that we don't form a threat, and they tend to ignore us.
That's That's
and the only time that breaks that truly breaks down is when people start feeding. And if there's one thing folks take away from this interview, is whatever you do, please do not allow coyotes to be fed. In those cases where there are documented coyote attacks, they've all occurred out west or the provincial parks up in Canada, and every single incident has involved the feeding of the coyotes. Feeding breaks down their normal social behavior, and then you end up with multiple family groups coming to the feed area. So it's just like the pack mentality that we talked about before, where up in northern Wisconsin or the UP of Michigan, these large groups of coyotes will get together and actually take down deer. It breaks down their normal social behavior, and they start identifying young kids as a food source.
We're talking to Chris
Anker. That has not happened in Illinois up until this point.
We're talking to Chris Anker. He's the senior wildlife biologist for the Forest Preserves of Cook County and Urban Coyote Research Project. And it seems that this particular one coyote that we're looking for now, the one with the limp, the one that they think bit the child near the Peggy Notarbart Nature Museum.
No, so we're actually hearing that the one that's limping was not the one to bite the kid.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we're looking for the one. But
so there's at least two, apparently.
It's interesting that the coyote's near the zoo. I mean, that's because that's right across the street from the Lincoln Park mm-hmm. Zoo. That's if I were the coyote, I would go in there and I'd stand real close to the coyote exhibit there. And I go, hey, I'm here. I just
show off a little bit. That's
right.
Like, I'm free. No big deal roaming the streets.
I don't
of
really
Chicago.
Know anybody here yet. Try to make some friends.
Right. I don't know what to do. Well, how are they going to find the one that bit the kid, though? I mean, will they be out looking for that? Because once that has happened, does that make that animal more dangerous, do you think?
So when an animal breaks through that barrier where it normally has a healthy fear of humans, then you have to start becoming concerned. The last 3 years or so at all of the reported coyote attacks, later on during the investigation, they were able to take DNA of the animal that attacked. And in every case, once the DNA was run, they found out that it was, in fact, a dog, not a coyote. But if it is a coyote, or if it is a dog.
I gotta stop you. Wait, what was a dog? They thought that when they got the coyote, they thought the coyote was a coyote, but the coyote was a dog?
No. When they ran the DNA off the clothes of the victim, the DNA revealed that it was in fact not a coyote, but it was a dog.
I see. So now that's
and I'm not challenging the authenticity of the folks that witnessed this or who were attacked. But I'm just saying the last 3 or 4 years, the people who have come forward saying that they were attacked by coyotes, when the DNA was run mm-hmm. on the clothes that they were wearing,
right, got it.
It became obvious that it was, in fact, a dog. Mm. And then when the dogs were found, they were able to match the DNA and find that, yes, this is, in fact, the dog that bit this individual.
Right, because a coyote looks very different than a dog when you're up close, and they move differently. Their ambulation
Absolutely.
Is totally different.
Yep. Yes, they are.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them in the city a couple of times, and there's no mistaking them for a dog.
No. No.
Unless you're really an idiot.
Now, every couple of years, we'll have folks who will find a coyote pup in the woods and take it home thinking that it's a puppy German Shepherd, and they'll start raising it, and
yeah.
then they take it to the veterinarian, and the vet says, wait a minute, you don't have a dog here, you've got a coyote.
Right, because they will not make good pets. But once they get old enough, they're not trainable like a dog, but they're super smart, right?
Absolutely. You know, not only is it illegal to have a coyote as a pet, it is very foolish to have a coyote as a pet, because their means of interacting with everything around them is the snap, is the bite. And eventually that's what it turns into. Even the people who raise it, eventually they will begin to snap and bite, because that's how they're designed.
They're wired.
They're wired to snap and bite. So.
All right. Okay, so will there be, but I want to just get back to this one thing, so I don't think we've got a clear answer on this. So in the area in which this kid was bitten, and again, they will be looking, to see if they can, are maybe trap the animal? I mean, should they be? This is a situation where they should be trying to go find. There's somebody should be out there trying to find this particular animal.
And as we speak, they have Chicago and Cook County Animal Control out trying to capture the animal.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
This is like Jaws.
I know. That's exactly what it's like. They're going to have to hire me. You want me to get the coyote? You hire me for $3,000 a day. All right. Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate it as always. Chris Anker.
No problem. Take care.
He's in charge of coyotes. That's basically what it. That's the most important thing for Cook County and part of the Urban Coyote Research Project.
I'm scared of the coyotes, bro.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mentioned they will learn your schedule, Kevin. So watch out. They're going to know when you get to your car or take the train. And if you're alone.
You know, Cheesy, you know how to tell how big a coyote is. You measure it from its tail to its snout. You ever seen a coyote's eyes? Dark eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Really? Oh, goodness.
Sorry, every time. Yes, I know. Bosun's mate, I'll never forget. Cut right in half by a coyote. Played ball in Cleveland. All right, we gotta go. Let us now take seriously the fact that we have a monster coyote out there that we have got to go find, people.
Well, one or two.
Yeah.
But definitely one's a monster.
All right, we got the news right now. Plus, don't forget, I got Roger Hodgson tickets coming up next hour. If you want to go see the guy who was Supertramp at the Four Winds Casino in February 22nd, stay close. Right now, Kim Gordon's got the WGN news. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, things coming up on the program I need to tell you about. Very important, coming up right around the corner here. Facebook is now going to give you the option to opt out of fake news ads.
Who's opting in?
Yeah, who?
But you're automatically opted in the problem. You have to go opt yourself out of it. We'll explain how that whole thing is going to work. And this does not seem like it's a reasonable and suitable solution to the problem here. But also, there's the issue of the gullibility of people who will read something and never question whether or not that's when it seems like, oh, that seems a little wacky.
Right.
And they don't, or if they're hitting people going, I knew it.
Yeah.
It's really more of the likely case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we will, we'll talk about that. The 49ers are the National Football League ball club San Francisco. They have the first emotional support dog.
Aw. Oh, yeah. Wait. No, I think I've seen it. It's a French bulldog, right?
It is. I believe it is. And it is. I get very confused when we get into the bulldog thing. That's the little.
Yeah. You're not like yours.
Yes.
Well, your grand dog.
Thank you, Lauren. this is I don't understand. Why? They're football players. And they need a little French bulldog to help them?
It is funny. They went with, the smallest dog.
Only in San Francisco would they do that. They should have just, they should have just got one of those purse dogs in San Francisco. You really want to.
Toy poodle.
Toy poodle. Just put it
Chihuahua.
Every day, one of the players gets to put it in a purse and take it home.
I mean, football players have feelings, too. If the little dog helps them.
I think it's actually really good for them. You have heard about some athletes, especially football players, that because they're so into the game, needing to be mean and angry and violent, it's good to step away from that facade sometimes. And a little French bulldog can help with that.
The one-year-old French bulldog spends most of her time, Zoe is her name, spends most of her time in the player engagement office, where the team can visit with her between
players can engage.
Practice and before and after games.
So who takes care of the dog, though?
I'm sure they got a guy.
Some intern?
Yeah. Hey, you're in charge. Don't lose the dog. Don't kill the dog. The Niners are the first team in the NFL to have a registered emotional support pooch. Among Zoe's talents, irresistible charm, the ability to carry a ball quite a long distance without fumbling. Oh, I see what they're
ball
doing.
Ball security is job security.
Yes. an uncanny technique of relaxing her big teammates, an Instagram account that features many famous Niners cuddling with her. All right. You know what? If I'm the, what do they play Minnesota, right? Wait, who do they got this
year? Yeah, I don't think Ed Obradovich's era had anything like an emotional.
Wait, no, Minnesota's out. Who are they playing this weekend?
They're playing. It's Minnesota and San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I knew it.
You knew it.
I got it all worked out. So yeah. Right. I just imagine Ed Obradovich's reaction to this.
Dick Butkus walking around Hallis Hall with a little Frenchie.
I don't see it.
I just don't see it.
I don't understand this. This is not, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, big and tough and rawr, as a football player. Not, I got to go cuddle with a little French bulldog.
It's a new era of players.
Hey, well, a bunch of hockey teams have little pups, but they're usually training them to be different kinds of service dogs. But they're so cute and they get to play with them. It's kind of the same idea. It's just,
what other kind of service dogs are they trained to be? You know, ice cleaning service dogs?
Well, it could be some of the dogs that help with diabetes, or they now have like the cancer sniffing dogs. They have ones that help with seizures. So there's just all kinds of variety.
Should we get an emotional?
Yes.
For the show, just hang out with us in the studio.
Absolutely.
All the time.
We do have some dogs in the Rocancho family at this moment.
Yes,
but I think there's a rule about what you can bring into the building here. That's what I keep. That's, you know, that was how my parents kept me from having a dog when I was a kid. There's a rule. We can't have that. Who's going to go walk the dog? I'll walk the dog. I went and walked other people's dogs in the building because I wanted to do that when I was a kid, because I wanted to be around dogs, and my parents wouldn't let me have one, and I still haven't forgiven them for it. Yeah. But this is a very unimpressive thing that these San Francisco 49ers are doing.
I think you're just jealous.
This doesn't seem right. It's just, you know, it's sort of like they're playing to a stereotype here. That's all I'm going to say. I don't think it's right. Coming up in the top five at five at the top of the hour, we have a pretty interesting array of things you might want to stay tuned for. Celebrity trainer Jillian Michaels is under fire for body shaming Lizzo.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
was she really body shaming?
I'm sure she was. She's that fitness person, right?
Brad Pitt comments on the making of Ocean's 14.
Brad Pitt's the man.
And remembering legendary comedian Buck Henry. That's coming up in the top five of five at the very top of the, well, right after the news at the top of the hour. Okay, Mr. Richard Roper's going to be here a little bit later in the program, too. There's a bunch of movies coming out this weekend, and there's some stuff that's going to be on the streaming services. That's one of the services he now provides. Not just, hey, I got to go to the theater, but everybody's got at home, not everybody, but many people have streaming services, and you could sit in front of the menu of Netflix for 2.5 hours trying to figure out what it is you want to watch and not being able to make a decision.
I think I've done that more than watched actual minutes worth of content on there.
And then I end up watching a movie I've seen 100 times already. Right.
Exactly. Netflix ambivalence is what it's called. So we're going to solve that problem with Richard Roper.
Yay.
He's going to tell you exactly what you should be watching and whether it's that or any of the other streaming services. So we got that going for us as well. And that's all coming your way. But first, Lauren Lapka can tell us what's happening in the roads and the skies. It's the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. All right, now, remember, in 2016, we had all this talk about fake news and Facebook, and people were getting ads, and were the Russians putting out the ads? There were also political campaigns were putting out ads that had complete fabrications in them.
And then deep fake videos that are very scary because you can alter a video and make someone who is not that person say something, but look like them.
Right. Or the video, or pictures, pictures of people standing with each other. As a matter of fact, this just even came out this last week after the whole Iranian thing, right? Mm-hmm. There's one politician out west who posted a picture of Barack Obama and the president of Iran shaking hands, mm-hmm. which never happened.
Right.
But they put that out as a campaign ad, yep. right? Or as a fundraising ad. So Facebook has made an announcement here. Facebook has announced that they are wusses in a press release, which explains very, very well that all they're really doing is letting you opt out of this, as opposed to taking everybody out and letting you opt in. Craig Timberg is with us. He's from the Washington Post. He's a technology reporter. And you'll be able to explain this much better than I can here. So what exactly do you have to do if you're on Facebook to avoid these ads?
Well, you can go in a few months anyway when they activate this thing. You'll be able to go in and turn off a certain kind of advertising targeting you. But that's not really the point, right? The point is our democracy. And so the people who were advocating for more aggressive change wanted it to be harder to, you know, harder for micro-targeting to happen. They wanted it to be, the whole process to be more transparent. And they also wanted there to be rules, so when politicians lie, there are consequences. Now, none of those things have happened.
So the lying part, I just want to start with that, because that's really the issue here for me, which is when whether it's an advertiser or a politician. And the thing is, advertisers cannot misrepresent their product. The Federal Trade Commission frowns upon that. But there are no rules for politicians, right?
Well, that's good, because the politicians make the rules. So as a consequence, there really are no rules when it comes to political speech.
So is there any sense that people are going to avail themselves of this? Is it complicated to do this if you want to? And if you want to opt out, the people who would, I want to be careful how I say this, because I don't want it to sound condescending, but it probably already will. But those who wish to opt out are probably people who are curious enough to want to know what it is and be able to decipher the difference.
It's long been the case that that virtually everybody keeps their settings on whatever the automatic preset is. Very few people ever opt out of anything, and so tech companies know that because they have all the data on what all of us do all of the time. And so when they say something is an opt-in thing or that you can choose to opt out, they're assuming that most people aren't going to do that. They're assuming that everyone's going to basically let the system work the way it always has.
Yeah. And this really did not address the issue. And I know there was so much, there was such hue and cry, right, in Congress after 2016 and after 2018 specifically, and nothing happened.
Well, there are a couple things did happen. I mean, Facebook and the others have much better threat intelligence teams than they used to, and they really do take down, when they find obviously nefarious things, particularly when they're foreign based, they do take them down. And you know, Facebook has an ads library, which is a nice thing. So if we can see all of Donald Trump's ads, we can see all of Joe Biden's ads. So that's handy. Like, so it's not nothing, but it's nowhere near what lots of folks were calling for. You know, Facebook yet again has managed to kind of withstand the heat and stick by its guns and doing what's best for its business model, which is, you know, as much free speech as they can allow for as many people as possible at all times, because all of that speech gets monetized.
Right. That's the point. And it's monetized because we are actually the product to the advertiser.
We are the product, right? The customer is the advertisers.
Yes. So they're basically, by aggregating you, by saying, hey, you know, you just become one of thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people who are being subjected to that particular ad, because they're going after you based on this, as you just pointed out, this micro-targeting. Explain what that is, because we've talked about this a number of times, the documentary The Great Hack, which explains a lot of what happened here in 2016 in terms of what the technology was and what it was that this Cambridge Analytica, what this company was trying to do and who they were trying to move from in terms of their political positions and the techniques that they were using to do it. And there's a lot of stuff in there that is very, very, very disquieting.
So there's two major types of what they call micro-targeting. One is Facebook knows essentially everything about you. And so if an advertiser wants to target, you know, single white men in their 40s in the Chicago area who have a college education and really like jazz, an advertiser can buy that, right? They can buy any number of assemblages of groups, and they can slice it down to as few as 100 people. So that means that for a political campaign, the ability, you can basically shape every message to every imaginable group. And And what worries people is then there's not the same sort of accountability there. If I put up a big billboard in the middle of Chicago that says, you know, the sky is yellow, you know, I'll look like a fool. But if I send a message to 100 people who are maybe predisposed to thinking the sky is yellow, like that may well yeah. work. Like the feedback mechanism isn't there. Likewise with television ads. Obvious lies get called out. There might be news coverage, all that stuff. The other thing, the other kind of micro-targeting is you get a list of people. Let's say you track everybody who visits a website about a certain issue, immigration, guns, whatever. You can just send ads just to those people. Or you get a list of people who have donated to the Sierra Club or have donated to the Koch brothers. You can give ads just to those people. Facebook knows who we all are.
Right.
And so that's what micro-targeting is. It's, you know, during the 2016 campaign, Donald Trump's campaign was running 50 to 60,000 different types of ads every day.
Wow.
And that's in part because they were going after very particular groups of people, and it was super effective.
Talking to Craig Timberg, technology reporter for the Washington Post, and about these new rules at Facebook, which seem like very weak tea to me. But one of the other rules one of the other technologies they're going to put in place at Facebook is you are going to be able to more easily identify the source of the material, right? The source of the advertiser or the who's putting it up.
Well, so you already can look up the source of any ad using the ad archive. What they've tweaked in a very minor way is you can now see how many people were supposedly targeted by that ad. So you can see whether it's 100 or 100,000 or a million people who are targeted by the ad. I don't know what anyone would do with that information, but it will now be possible in the Facebook ad archive.
So it doesn't really change. I guess this is the point that I'm trying to make. It doesn't really change the sort of thing when you watch The Great Hack or, you know, you study what it is that has happened here and you get uncomfortable with it. It doesn't really change any of the central reasons you're uncomfortable.
No. I don't know anybody who is advocating for major action from Facebook who regards what happened today as responsive to their concerns.
Got it. All right, Craig, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Craig Timberg, who is, as I said, technology reporter.
The whole thing is frustrating because, again, the people that this would even matter for are probably not going to even know what's going on. And there are going to be the people that are still reading headlines or seeing memes or pictures and believing that it's real.
Right. But that's,
so it's really nothing. Right. It's just an image.
The point I was trying to make, and inarticulately, I can't even say that word out right, but is that if you are concerned that you're being lied to,
then you're already researching what you're reading.
Right. Yes. Then to turn off that is just to say, well, I don't want ads from that particular mm-hmm. person or that side.
Yeah.
But then there is the most people on Facebook don't want to work that hard.
No.
Right. To try to go, if you see it, I mean, I firmly believe, and again, what the basis of The Great Hack was, the idea was that they weren't trying to convert people who already had a political position or reinforce their political position. They were looking right. for those people in the middle that mm-hmm. they thought they could sway one way or the other.
Right.
That was the point. And so those are people that, according to that documentary, the gullibility factor is a little higher with them because they haven't really done a whole lot of thinking about what these issues are, and they just want to be part of the conversation.
Well,
it's
also
a small percentage of people.
By using your friends and family and thinking that someone has similar ideas, it's easier to sway.
All right. Okay, coming up on the other side, a top 5 at 5 that is significant, my friends, including we're saying goodbye to a comedy legend, Buck Henry. If you don't know that name, we'll explain who he is in the top 5 at 5, which comes your way after the news at the top of the hour.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokon Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
And here's the top 5. Top 5 pieces of audio that we think you would enjoy the most this afternoon. Informative, entertaining, and in some cases, bittersweet. Because we're going to say goodbye to a comedy legend at the end of this one, Buck Henry. If you're not familiar with who that is, you'll probably be surprised at how familiar you really are. But that's coming up. All right. First, we start with
number five.
Lawmakers are calling for an investigation after a longtime ally of House Speaker Mike Madigan reveals a state worker may have covered up a criminal sexual assault as well as the identity of a ghost payroller. There was an email dated July 31st, 2012 from lobbyist Mike McClain, who is very close with Mike Madigan, should be noted, unrelated to this story specifically, as far as we know at this moment. And it was sent to members of then-Governor Pat Quinn's staff. In it, McClain pleads for leniency in a disciplinary hearing for a state worker and then vouches for his loyalty. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are now calling for an investigation, including Bill Brady, the Senate minority leader who spoke with us earlier today.
It does surprise me, but it's getting to where nothing surprised me. I think we have to remember there's a victim in this case, and we have to do everything we can to protect that victim. But I have authored a letter today that I'm sending to the Director of State Police and that I'm sending a copy to the governor and the other three legislative leaders demanding or requesting that he open an investigation into this. We can't allow this to go uninvestigated. The truth needs to be known under all circumstances, and it seems like right now there's just too many ways to pass the buck.
It is such a cesspool down in Springfield.
Well, I was going to say, the other alarming part is simply by the way he worded it in the email is, okay, you and I both also know about this crime. This guy knows about the crime, and he kept his mouth shut, so he is loyal. But the fact that there are so many people that know
right
about this rape.
Yes. What is amazingly galling to me, it's not alarming because I think many people knew it. No, also intuitively understand that what happens in Springfield is there's a lot of really stupid and bad things that happen down there. But the covering up for each other is just part of the deal. And the code of silence down there for the bad behavior. And you're starting to see, you know, politics being written in such partisan ways around as we continue to divide as a culture, as a society, as we get into our own groups, whether it's on Facebook or social media or whatever. We just choose to consume information and socialize with only people who agree exactly with our positions. That's the kind of thing that's been going on in Springfield forever. So what they were agreeing on was how they were going to split up all of the money. And that was the crazy, 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 crazy thing that went on there forever. So, you know, having outsiders going in like Bruce Rauner or I think like J.B. Pritzker as well, you know, there is an opportunity for people to have new eyes on the subject. And these are people who don't need to be there because they don't need the money that is in. And sometimes it's not money like those guys. Those guys are billionaires, right? But the people who were stealing or covering up for each other or trying to basically eat from the poison tree of Illinois politics, feast from the poison tree of Illinois politics, those folks do need to be rooted out because there's a lot of people who are down there not to do the right thing. They're just down there to game the system.
Right.
And that's that. And we've been saying this for years and years and years. I'm making a speech right now that has been made for as long as I have lived about the endemic corruption and the just absolute thick-fingered thievery that goes on in Springfield. But at some point, you got to do something about it. Now, I know the feds have been very, very good about nailing Chicago politicians doing it. They have to start looking because that's a different prosecutor's office. That's the Central District of Illinois. But it is, but they do have to be looking at that as well. Because this is unbelievable. And the details, as you point out, Lauren, the details in that letter are just absolutely alarming. We'll get to your four, your three, your two, and your one, including Lizzo being fat shamed by a very famous trainer. But first, Lauren tells us what's happening in the skies and on the roads.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN TV Morning News Team, weekdays 4 to 10.
Top 5 of 5 continues. Checking in at
number 4.
Got an adult male who was bitten by a coyote.
Over at Fullerton Parkway in Cannon, it looks like a coyote bit a little boy. And the coyote is still on the loose.
Be on the lookout for a coyote. I think we're always on the lookout for a coyote, aren't we?
Absolutely.
All right, so reported coyote attacks throughout Chicagoland here. You had the north side where at Prager Notobart Museum, that's where the five-year-old was bitten. Then there was a sighting of a coyote trying to enter Northwestern Memorial Hospital. The Northwestern Medical News, the Medicine Newsroom, by the way, has been covering that. Mm-hmm. To see how we worked all that together.
That was probably the limping one, let's be honest.
Yes, exactly. That's right. Sprained its coyote ankle, and it's decided to go to the emergency room. Which one's the emergency room entrance?
If it knows how to use crosswalks, I wouldn't be surprised.
Do you think he's got an Obamacare card where he goes in? Actually, that explains why the coyotes. There was also a report of coyotes that had surrounded a Sprint store in the West Loop, mm-hmm. which means that they probably also were looking for the Obama phone, too. I know. That's exactly what Fox News said. Anyway, not the point. Here we go. So the problem is this was seen, the limping coyote was seen by a Channel 9 camera guy. As he was shooting around Northwestern this morning, because there had been reports of this, and the coyote was coming at him.
Stay away. Get away.
Last year, it was a 2-foot gator that terrorized the entire city.
No, we got a limping coyote.
No, we got a wounded coyote.
That's a very good name for a bar, by the way, the limping coyote.
I like that.
Yeah. I think we should do that.
They want to get a couple beers at the Limping Coyote after work? Sure.
Or a name of a beer, right? One of those beers that they make up on the Northwest side, right?
This is our new craft brew. Just came in.
Limping Coyote. Okay. Well, now, we just spoke a little bit ago with Chris Anker, who is the senior wildlife biologist for the Forest Preserves of Cook County and Urban Coyote Research. And he says that despite all of this, they tend to be pretty afraid of humans, or at least they don't have a... they're not aggressive toward humans. They're not naturally aggressive toward humans. Coyote bites are very, very, very rare. And they're very, very, very intelligent.
They're intelligent enough to realize that we don't form a threat, and they tend to ignore us.
That's
and the only time that breaks that truly breaks down is when people start feeding. And if there's one thing folks take away from this interview, is whatever you do, please do not allow coyotes to be fed. In those cases where there are documented coyote attacks, they've all occurred out west or the provincial parks up in Canada, and every single incident has involved the feeding of the coyotes. Mm-hmm. Feeding breaks down their normal social behavior, and then you end up with multiple family groups coming to the feed area.
Do not feed the coyotes.
No. And also, don't give them anvils or dynamite. Checking in at
number 3.
Former Biggest Loser trainer Jillian Michaels is in hot water. She has heard your criticism over her comments about Lizzo's body, and she doesn't care. The fitness expert doubled down on her original statements made in BuzzFeed's AM to DM show, where she was asked about Lizzo.
I love her music. Yeah, 100%. I don't know anything about her. I'm sure she's a cool, awesome chick. But why are we celebrating her body? Why does it matter? That's what I'm saying. Like, why aren't we celebrating her music? Because it isn't going to be awesome if she gets diabetes. Just being honest, like, I love her music. Like, my kid loves her music. But there's never a moment where I'm like, and I'm so glad that she's overweight. Like, why do I even care? Like, why is it my job to care about her weight?
So now, Jillian Michaels is being accused of body shaming Lizzo. Which, by the way, doesn't Lizzo have a song called Truth Hurts?
Believe she does.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. She's been slammed for the suggestion that Lizzo might be at risk, you know, for, like she just said, for diabetes without actually knowing her medical condition.
First of all, most people that are morbidly obese are not healthy. Now, if they're working on losing weight, then because they're working out and they're eating right, you can reverse that stuff pretty quick. But I mean, I've been doing this a real long time. I've yet to meet a person that's gotten themselves to 200, 250, 300 pounds, and the doctor goes, looking good. I mean, no, just no. I'm not saying, and never have I said, that we shouldn't be inclusive and accepting. I'm saying that I don't love Lizzo because she's overweight. I like her because of her music.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in the hole, I don't know why you just keep digging, right? Mm-hmm. I just okay, you get it. And her point is really not as
it's not as cruel or
insensitive as I think a lot of people are trying to make it out to be. I think she's just stating a fact. And as a person who is a fitness professional, right, that's, you know, it kind of plays against what she tries to teach and train. And Jillian Michaels scares the hell out of me.
Oh my gosh, yeah, right?
Right? I mean,
I was thinking that too.
Even
she's
on those
terrifying
commercials, like that commercial for the, you know, she does a thing that's like the Bowflex, I don't know, whatever it is, mm-hmm, where it looks like it's cutting you in half. When she looks at you, you're like, oh, okay.
I'll get on the bike. I'll get on the treadmill tomorrow, right, I promise.
Yeah. Just don't look at me like that anymore.
You're body shaming me.
Well, that's the point of a trainer, isn't it? To body shame?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
We wish everybody the best of luck.
Number two.
Brad Pitt opened up about his sobriety. And this was a surprising thing that happened here, by crediting Bradley Cooper for helping him get sober. He was presented an award. Brad won Best Supporting Actor for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at the National Board of Review Awards Gala last night. And after being handed the award and hugging it out with he and Bradley Cooper, he praised Bradley Cooper in his speech.
Thank you, Bradley. Bradley just put his daughter to bed and rushed over here to do this. He's a sweetheart. I got sober because of this guy. And every day has been happier ever since. I love you and I thank you. Well, it's nice to be able to leave this thing carrying something other than George Clooney. My goals in life now are pretty simple, just to be happy, stay healthy, and not get into a financial situation where I have to do Ocean's 14.
he's having quite a moment here, isn't he?
He is. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting how, and maybe we should take some advice here. It's amazing how guys who have careers that go a little wobbly and then they get sober and their careers take back off again. I'm just saying to the three of us, that's all I'm saying.
And Iron Man,
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. I mean, he was breaking into his neighbor's house and sleeping on the race car bed of the 10-year-old accidentally. And then the next thing you know, the guy's worth $500 million as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe I should try sobriety.
There's that. Maybe you wouldn't be leaving your bag on the train like you did yesterday, young man.
That's a very good point.
That was a story that Kevin told a little bit earlier after our night out last night, taking the train home and leaving his bag and then having a fine Metra employee find it and somehow mysteriously contact Kevin on his cell phone.
Yeah, apparently they're now texting. They're fast friends.
Best friends now. Love this guy.
All right, and in the top 5 at 5 of the audio that we think you need to hear today and that you'll enjoy hearing today, we find ourselves at
number one.
Legendary screenwriter, director, and actor Buck Henry has died. His immense talent came to light when he co-created the sitcom Get Smart with Mel Brooks back in 1965.
Don't turn around. Take 2 steps backward. The briefcase.
Just a minute. How do I know we'll get the chief back?
Don't worry, you'll get him. Satan always keeps his word.
Satan? Harvey Satan of Chaos?
That's right.
I thought he was in jail. Wasn't he convicted of arson, treason, insurrection, and mass murder?
He got time off for good behavior.
One of the smart, funniest shows ever on television. You know, there's a lot of funny shows on TV, and some of them don't necessarily have to be highfalutin comedy. And this was the key to Buck Henry, because Buck Henry partnered with Mel Brooks on a number of different things, and you could sit back and just watch it and have it wash over you, and it was funny. And then if you thought about it, it was even funnier. And that was the hallmark of his work, including his work on Saturday Night Live. He was a writer, one of the original writers for Saturday Night Live, and then he appeared as a sketch comedian. At that point, you know, the not for ready for time, they're not ready for primetime players, as they were known back then when they put Saturday Night Live up on the air. Those are the main actors, but they use all kinds of other people along the way. Al Franken would jump in. Buck Henry would jump in. He was, here's a clip from The Graduate, which Buck Henry, now, again, you talk about really important narrative work from the 20th century. The Graduate is right up there in the top 20 films of all times, and it was Buck Henry's pen that put it together.
Sit down, Benjamin.
Oh, my God.
Pardon?
Oh, no, Mrs. Robinson, oh, no.
What's wrong?
Mrs. Robinson, you didn't expect...
What?
I mean, you didn't really think I'd do something like that.
Like what?
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
For God's sake, Mrs. Robinson. Here we are. You got me into your house. You give me a drink. You put on music. Now you start opening up your personal life to me and tell me your husband won't be home for hours.
So?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
And back to Saturday Night Live for a second. Here he is, one of the most famous sketches from early Saturday Night Live, the John Belushi samurai bit.
Do you have a king-size bed, one with a king-size bed? If I could just perhaps get a room with, you know what I'd like? A room overlooking the park. Are the rates high for that kind of thing?
Get out!
That's fine.
Get
out! What's your checkout time? Which one of you is going to carry my bags upstairs?
Buck Henry was 89.
The top five at five.
All right, Kim Gordon's going to give us the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up here in just a few minutes. I want to remind you, coming up after the news, Mike Monaco, our legal analyst, is going to be here. We'll talk about the Jussie Smollett update today. I know, there's a Jussie Smollett update. Plus, I got the Roger Hodgson tickets coming your way in just a few minutes as well. He's the guy from Supertramp who's going to be at the Four Winds Casino February 22nd. Tickets available at Ticketmaster and Four Winds Casino as well. But we'll give them to you coming up. At first, the news. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Mr. Michael Monaco, our legal analyst, chief legal analyst of this program, unpaid position, is here in the studio with us. Michael, it's your first time back in 2020. Thank you, sir.
Yes, it is. Happy New Year.
Former federal prosecutor and then a long-serving attorney in criminal defense practice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
So I like to say criminal lawyers, which I think is a really bad way to put it.
That's not the way to put it, Ron.
No, it is not. All right, listen, we also have the Supertramp tickets or the Roger Hodgson from Supertramp tickets coming your way in just a few minutes, so stay close for that. Now, Jussie Smollett.
Yes.
Is back in the news. I'm going to try to remain calm during this. Now, yes. People will recall. I just, in case you're wondering, let's just go back. Let us recap. It's about a year ago now that this happened.
Right.
11 months,
right.
Maybe
the end of January of last
yep.
year.
That Jussie Smollett
said,
young actor on the hit Fox television show Empire.
Yes,
was back in Chicago. He's not from Chicago. He was living in Los Angeles at the time. Comes to Chicago to shoot the show. That's what they did here.
Yes,
they were shooting the show at the fine studios in the southwest side of the city.
Well, this one the night I saw him, he was at the Fourth Presbyterian Church on Michigan Avenue
shooting
Empire.
There.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So they shot the house that they used for their house for the house of the Terrence and Cookie or whatever their names are is the house right around the corner from me.
Oh.
And they actually shoot the interiors in the house. Oh. It's crazy what goes on in that show. It was such a great boon to Chicago to have that business here. And now that I think they're done in production, but poor Jussie Smollett will leave an image that will not, a stain on this city that shall not be soon erased. And here's what he did. I just want to go back through the facts of the case. Mr. Monaco.
It was a dark and cold night.
It was. Yes. There was one of the coldest nights in Chicago of last winter. One of the coldest nights in the history of Chicago.
That's true.
And Jussie Smollett arrives from Los Angeles, goes to his rental apartment in South Streeterville, right across the river from us right here, right around the river and just between Lakeshore Drive and Michigan Avenue, right? That's what you need to know. He decides at, let's call around midnight.
Or later.
That he needs to get a tuna sandwich from Subway.
How do you remember that, it was a tuna sandwich?
Because it was the worst choice.
Oh, okay. Excellent idea.
So there you go. So he goes to get a tuna sandwich. Yes. The wind chill at this particular time, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, was in the 20 below range.
Yes.
For the wind chill. The air temperature was hovering around zero.
Yes, that's
Mr. true. Mr. Smollett claimed that he was approached by two men wearing red Make America Great Again hats who were holding a noose and said, "This is MAGA country." And they placed the noose around his neck and attempted to assault him. Somehow, the entire time he was holding on to the tuna sandwich, not a hair was harmed on the head of the tuna sandwich.
Didn't he also claim that they threw bleach on him or tried to throw bleach on him?
That's right.
That's correct.
Very good memory.
That's right. That's good.
I represented him, and I don't remember that. Yeah, I only represented him when he was a victim, the first 3 days. Yes.
Right. That worked out great.
Yeah.
That was great for everybody. Mike calls me and says, "You're not going to believe who I'm representing." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
Although I've said that about a number of your clients over the years.
Then I said Michael Cohen a few months later.
Why? You got to go, "Are you kidding me?" That's right. Anyway, the point is that Jesse Smollett, as it turns out, that story didn't really hold up.
Which he repeated on Good Morning America.
Right.
To Robin.
No, he was actually on the CBS Morning Show.
No. Robin
came
to Chicago to interview him.
That's correct.
I said, "I don't think so. I don't think you should do this."
That's correct.
Ah, sorry.
I got the R. Kelly thing confused.
When, That's right.
Robert, sit down. Yeah. I know. It was the same sweeps month. So anyway, so go ahead. And this was perfect for sweeps. That's the other piece of this we should not forget. It was right at the beginning of television sweeps in February of last year. And so this story, the Jesse Smollett thing, was just huge.
Yes.
Just huge. Turns out the story didn't stand up, but he stood by his story. And then he was basically... diverted. It's almost like acquitted, but he was diverted.
Pretrial diversion.
Diversion.
First he got indicted. The Cook County State's Attorney indicted him, and the case went along for a very short period of time. I was no longer representing him. He had some very good lawyers, and then out of the blue, which is now the subject of a whole lot of various questions, is the Cook County State's Attorney dropped the case and did not require him to admit guilt.
Right.
Yes.
And all he had to go do is work in the library, Operation Push, for a couple of hours and then take some pictures of some people. Yeah. And the next thing you know, go, community service, time served, nothing to see here, move along.
Yeah. And normally you've got to admit guilt. You know, at least say you did what they're claiming you did and sign a waiver of the statute of limitations. So while you're on a period of probation, and if you screw up during that period, they could that's why you waive the statute, so that they can bring the charges against you.
So it's not double jeopardy.
So it's not double jeopardy. Yes, so that happened.
Right.
And then he went on television saying, "I told you I was not guilty."
Right.
Ouch.
Yes, he continued to claim he wasn't guilty, and that just made everybody here mad.
Yes,
Chicago Police Department spent all these resources, and they eventually did try to take into custody the two guys who happened to have been business associates of Jesse Smollett, who are identified as the ones buying the noose on a Northwest Side hardware store.
That's right.
Oh, my God!
That's true.
All right, hold on. But now judge has made a very interesting ruling in this case.
Yes, he did.
And we will talk to Michael Monaco about it right after we find out from Lauren Lapko what's happening in the skies and on the roads. Michael Monaco is with us in the studio on the Rokan Show. Of course, you've got Kevin Powell on sports. You've got Lauren Lapko on traffic and weather and thoughts. And then, of course, Kim Gordon in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's gets everybody. Everybody understands who everybody else is here. Yeah. Now Mike Monaco is our legal analyst, famed criminal defense attorney. Just in the last year has been involved in some of the most high-profile cases in America, including Michael Cohen and Jussie Smollett. And we're talking about Jussie Smollett right now because a judge yesterday ordered Google to turn over Jussie Smollett's emails, photos, location data, and private messages for an entire year as part of the special prosecutor's investigation into the purported attack of the actor.
Right. From November 2018 to November 2019.
So let me ask you this, Michael. If they find that Jussie Smollett actually conspired to do this and then conspired to cover it up, could they get another bite at the apple?
Yeah, they can indict him. It seems like they'll have. It would still be timely to indict him, and I think they'll have no trouble indicting him if they prove that he was complicit in doing, you know, setting up this hoax.
Yeah.
Because it really the policemen involved were very, very upset.
And the city spent a lot of money because the city was upset. Well,
sure.
and people must remember exactly what the tenor of that was.
It was homophobic and it was racist,
right? And,
for sure.
And it was playing into a cultural divide that seems to be emergent in America. And the whole idea here was that Chicago was the epicenter of this.
Yeah.
And the Chicago police were like, hey, this is not.
No.
First of all,
Chicago.
First of all,
really?
You're in one of the safest neighborhoods, like Stockholm, Sweden, over here, until a couple days ago in Streeterville.
Yeah.
And then.
Until the coyote came.
Right. And then. Yeah. If there are coyotes in Stockholm, you know what we're talking about. And it was one of the coldest nights. I mean, there's no crime.
And they recognized him. I said, they recognized you? They recognized me. Okay, they recognized you. I believe
that. Was he at that point acknowledging that they were African-American?
No. They were racist and, as I said, homophobic. And no,
was he saying they were white?
Well, that's going to be an issue.
Because he never explicitly said that. Yeah.
It seems so. The way he described them.
That's very interesting.
Because they were not masked.
No. And they weren't wearing MAGA hats either, right?
They were not wearing MAGA hats, no.
So, and that's a misunderstanding about whether they said MAGA country and whether
exactly
he
right.
actually said that they were wearing hats, but then it became sort of.
But it was all in his mind, if you believe the police.
I do. And in this particular case, I clearly do. Yes. Yeah. All right. At this point, may I just ask you this? Now, I know you're a criminal defense attorney.
Yes,
and
I am.
You are a member of the bar, and there are cases that you would have. You don't do a ton of state casework, but from time to time it comes across your desk, especially when I call.
Yes.
So, if your thoughts on this. Kim Fox's handling of this, she says that she may have, dropped the ball?
On the so-called recusal.
Yes.
Because it doesn't appear that she was recused.
No.
Their team fell short, I believe, was also said.
Yes, fell short. Yeah, they fell short. Yes.
Of the recusal?
Well, she fell short of just maybe not doing the best. But, you know, they're so busy.
Has she admitted that?
Yes. But they were very busy. You know, she's very busy letting other people out of jail and then making sure that people who are knocking over stores on Michigan Avenue are free to go and get back to knocking over stores on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
So it's very busy. Yeah. She's very busy doing that. Basically handing the keys to the jail over back to those who are in.
Yeah.
So I suppose that we must forgive her for that. But do you think that there's a political price for this?
It seems so. I mean, this is the whole point. I know Sheila O'Brien, the former judge, filed this motion herself. She did it herself in front of Judge Tooman to get a special prosecutor appointed because people were angry. People were upset.
Yes.
And so
I'm among them.
And you're even on the radio.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, this is it's crazy because there's so many things that go wrong in this town. And you would stop and you go, why is C's on this? But because it's a.
It
I'll
was a violation of the city's integrity, right. reputation, and that.
And we're thin on all of that anyway. And I just don't want it. I don't want a guy coming in. I don't want an outsider
coming in
here and making it worse. Yeah. We got enough trouble in the house already. We don't need somebody else coming out here and telling us that our baby is ugly.
Yeah, well, we'll see what Mr. Webb does. He's a good lawyer. He's at Winston and Strawn. He's gonna investigate the whole.
Yeah.
Shenanigans.
I want to ask you about another high profile case.
Oh, good.
Since we have you
on
the radio right now with us, Mike Monaco. And this would normally, if I had a conversation
sure
like him,
I'm
like
representing.
This would cost me about $1,200 to have this conversation with him right
for
now.
Sure.
And if we're going to trial, $2,500. let's talk about Harvey Weinstein for a second.
Yeah.
So that trial started this week.
He doesn't look good walking into court.
Okay. All right. Now, that's the first thing I want to ask you.
He looks pretty
Have you
beat.
Ever bought an oxygen tank for any of your clients and had them drag it behind them when they were going to the courtroom?
I thought about it at sentencing once, about putting a guy on a tank, wheeling him in.
Yeah.
I thought about it sentencing, not during a trial.
How about a walker? You ever buy a guy a walker?
No, I never bought a guy a walker.
Wheelchair?
I'm getting one now, I think.
Yeah.
Depends on what the jury does in this case.
Well,
maybe I'll get one.
It is interesting because they bought him a walker. Now we must remember that a couple of weeks ago, Harvey Weinstein was at a comedy club.
Yes.
Right? And then got booed when he was at the comedy club.
Oh, that's
right, and seemed to be having a good time and all that.
Not
and,
right.
And there was like a whole thing that goes on, and now all of a sudden he's walking in.
Well, supposedly he was in a car accident, wasn't he?
Yeah, supposedly he was in a car accident.
I heard he had hip surgery.
Hip surgery, there.
Yeah,
you go.
That's all of the above.
Everything is true.
As far as you can tell,
yeah.
He doesn't
look good.
He's hunched over on a wheelie walker.
Yeah.
You know, one of those walkers with the little wheels on the bottom
and maybe some
tennis balls.
That's right.
And he's moving his way through like hunched over. It's one of the great attempts to be seen as pathetic I have ever witnessed.
Well, it's sort of reminiscent of Mr. Cosby.
Yeah. Well, that remember that all of a sudden Bill Cosby was blind?
He was blind.
When he got to trial?
Yeah. I mean, that was interesting that happened. But this is... he does not look good. So we'll see. I mean, because I would think you'd want him to look good.
Okay. So now
they explain why the women were agreed to.
You want to be dashing? Really? If you were defending him, would that be your strategy?
You'd rather have him look dashing than pathetic, wouldn't you?
Oh, my God. Him?
Of course these women were after him. Look at him. He's a beautiful person.
Oh, God.
Like George Clooney.
I just threw up in my mouth.
If he looked like George Clooney, for example.
Well, that's true.
I mean...
That's true. When George Clooney was sleeping with everybody in Hollywood, nobody cared about that.
Nobody cared. No. Exactly.
Because, I mean, you at least called an Uber. All right. So now there's charges in California against Harvey Weinstein.
No,
as well.
Not yet. A friend of mine represents him there. And 8 charges were dropped in California. And they have not. I don't think.
But I thought yesterday. I think they reinstated him yesterday.
Yesterday,
yes.
Did? Oh, I didn't see.
So
that.
Now that's a new. That's a new situation.
Yeah, a friend of mine out there represents him.
And that's not double jeopardy because this is state by state, right?
Different women. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, different women, different event.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not good for him. Yeah. How many walkers can a guy buy to get out of this thing?
Yes, that's
because he's not going to. I don't think.
Well, we'll see. Now, see, the case in New York is not that. I mean, I think there are only 2 women in New York who are going to complain. Testify in the case, I think. Now, they may try to get other women, like they did with Mr. Cosby in his second trial, try to get other people to come in to court to say that he did this same thing to them.
There have been a lot of people who have lined up on Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, prior consistent acts.
Yes, and especially, like forcing himself in hotel rooms and barring the door and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yes, he's not a good guy. Nobody, no one's going to argue that he's a good guy.
Lawyer's going to argue it.
Yes, right.
I suppose.
Again, for $2,500 an hour, at least it's probably $5,000 an hour for that case.
Yeah.
Are you? Would you just try to plead that thing out?
I don't know. I mean, they didn't plead it in California. His lawyer, Blair Burke, was a very good lawyer. She represented all the Hollywood people.
Yeah,
and she went to the LA County DA and convinced them not to bring the charges.
All right. I got to do this right now. Hold on. Thank you, Michael. It was great having you.
Nice seeing you.
Michael Monaco, attorney at law. No case too big or too small. Here we go. Right now, caller number 19, 312-9170-200, rips us off for a pair of tickets to see Supertramp's Roger Hodgson Perform live, Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds, New Buffalo on Saturday, February 22nd. That's a 9 o'clock Eastern show, 8 o'clock Chicago time, in case you're driving over. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster, Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. All right, we've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way right around the corner. And then Mr. Richard Roper will be here to tell you about things you should be going to the theater to see and staying at home to see on your streaming services. It's the Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. Mr. Richard Roper has just stepped into the studio, and he is a film critic of great renown. You can read him in the Chicago Sun-Times, or you can listen to his podcast, which is available on Apple Podcasts or on the Spotify. Thank you.
You always forget Spotify. I don't know why.
I don't know why I have a problem.
He just looks at Lauren and she gives him modern terms. Google Play, Spotify.
Yes. He's starring in a great podcast with a co-host named Rokon, who I happen to not really respect, but I like his work.
Much like Leo and Brad in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes.
One is the stunt double for the other.
I was thinking of you two as I watched Once Upon a Time for the first time. I go, I think I can kind of pull some comparisons to this relationship between the two.
That really is true.
Especially the crying in the parking lot. Where I'm like, can't let the valet guys. I'll just say valet guys. They call it differently.
Yeah, you guys are drinking buddies. You help each other out. Partners in crime.
Yeah.
I end up on the roof always trying to fix
his antenna. Why do you have an antenna still, bro?
The point is that Mr. Richard Roper is... I did once... I have... In the parking lot at Sabatino's, I cried to him, it's all over, buddy. It's all over. My career's over.
And the first time you did that was in the parking lot of seven restaurants that don't exist anymore, because it was 1992.
Yeah, that's really true.
So he's been saying the doom for a long time.
So, Mr. Richard Roper, so again, film critic of great renown. You can read him in the Sun-Times or the podcast is now available. The best movies of the decade, that was just released, and then 20 movies to look out for in 2020. And next week, it's going to be our Oscars preview.
The race for the gold, indeed.
Race for the gold. All right, let us talk about the movies that are out right now.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing. You know, it's 2020 and new movies come out every week, whether you like it or not sometimes. In the early January releases, historically, you expect to see something where all of a sudden, like the kid from Spider-Man is 12 because the movie's been sitting on the shelf for 7 years and they finally put it out there. But once in a while, you get some gems as well. You got to see all the movies before you make the judgment. I know you don't necessarily agree with that philosophy. Mr. YouTube.
That makes it very interesting. Makes for an interesting comparison when we're actually talking about these movies. I've seen all the ones we talk about, but go ahead.
That's true. So, in some cases, though, you can kind of see it coming. You can see the train going off the tracks, just like when you tried to put your Hot Wheels together back in 1977 with the orange track, and then you know the cars were going to go right off the rails. That brings us to Like a Boss, the would-be comedy opening this weekend. This is Tiffany Haddish, who we like. You know, Tiffany Haddish is very, very funny. And Rose Byrne, who's in the Neighbors movies and Bridesmaids, who's beautiful. But, you know, they both are beautiful, intelligent, charismatic, on-screen personas. So to team them up in a buddy comedy seems like it could be a good idea, except for this is so dreadful, so horrible. I did talk to Michael Phillips, my counterpart at the Tribune. Combined, we gave this movie 3 stars, but we had to add our stars up. For this, to give you an idea. Do we have a little sound from Like a Boss?
I need you to be fierce yourself so that you can inspire the ugly people to buy themselves into gorgeousness. Listen to the word. Fierce. Fierce. What is it saying to you?
I hear fear. Dearst.
I hear that too.
Fierce.
Because that's Salma Hayek. She plays this cosmetics, you know, legend who wants to buy up the boutique cosmetics store that best friends Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne have put together. And as you can tell by that scene, there's no movie in this movie. They just have fun with her not being able to pronounce fierce. And then that smashing sound as she takes out a golf club and smashes a vase for no reason whatsoever. As if they were all on set and said, what are we going to do today? Well, let's have Salma mispronounce a word and you guys riff off it. Most of the movie, it's 83 minutes long and it's still stretched out. The whole thing is they're best friends. They put together this, you know, this boutique cosmetics store and online business. Then Salma's character swoops in and wants to buy them out. And she tries to pit them against one another and they have their moments of, oh my gosh, we doubt our friendship. It is so ridiculous and so labored. I said 5 minutes into this movie, I'm like, I know there's going to be a scene where we're going to be in a karaoke bar. And sure enough, like just out of nowhere, like again, because they have to fill the movie. Hey, it's karaoke night. I'm like, oh, okay, got your karaoke scene. And it's very, very raunchy. It's that school of thought that says, let's dust off what could have been a guy buddy movie back in the day and put women in the lead, which was novel 10 years ago with Bridesmaids. It's no longer novel. It just proves these movies can be just as bad with women in the leads. You have do not take your mother or your grandmother to see this movie.
Should you even go to this movie?
No, you should not. But if you think, oh, this would be fun, you know, I could take mom or grandma.
Yeah, don't.
Don't do it.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, don't do it. Unless your mother, Sarah Silverman, you know, can handle. I mean, the blue humor, the descriptions of female parts are. Oh. I've never even. I had to look up some of the words afterward.
How many stars you give it?
1.5. Okay. I'm in a generous mood, so extra half. Right now on Rotten Tomatoes, it does have one positive review from Variety.
From Tiffany Haddish's agent.
Out of all the dozens of reviews.
All right, let's find out what's happening in the skies and on the roadways. Lauren Lapka.
Watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Matera and Joe Donlan weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
Thank you, Kevin Powell. Richard Roper is in the studio with us, famed film critic and, oh, extraordinaire. Don't you have to say that when you say famed, whatever it is. All right, you just told us, Like a Boss, the new Tiffany Haddish movie, is 1.5 stars. It's got 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes, I believe that among what they call the top critics, those who are getting paid to give their reviews. Yes.
Yes. We could get 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm always actually kind of entertained or intrigued when something is so horrible or so great. You want to read at least the one or two reviews that are contrarian.
Stephen King. You love Stephen King? Who here? Show of hands. People love Stephen King.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Show of hands on the radio?
Yes.
It's good.
Oh, everybody here. This is
weird. There were seven right hands.
Yeah, and only three people. Typical Stephen King. One came out from the grave.
So the HBO limited series, The Outsider, is a Stephen King story. Tell us about it.
Okay, so The Outsider is based on a Stephen King novel. And Richard Price, who's adapting it, is one of the great crime and television writers, The Wire, The Night Of. So it's like two of the great heavyweight storytellers of our time combining for this limited series. It's so fascinating from the start. The first episode, Jason Bateman, who better to play a likable family man? He's the Little League coach in an all-American town in Arkansas. Who better than Jason Bateman to play a guy? And that's who he's playing. And then on the Little League field during a game, the police show up en masse, handcuff him, arrest him, and he is tried and convicted for the brutal kidnapping and murder of a local 8-year-old boy. Shocks the community, national attention to this. How could this happen? His DNA evidence is all over the crime scene. Eyewitnesses, several, saw him with the little boy on the day of the murder. Also, he was at a literary conference 70 miles away during the time of the murder. And there's video of him asking a question at the conference in front of 200 people. So he's definitely guilty. The DNA evidence has him nailed. The eyewitnesses have him nailed. He's definitely not guilty. Because there are witnesses. There's evidence that he wasn't even in town. How can this be? It's a Stephen King story. That's how it can be. And it's not what you think. He doesn't have a twin brother or anything like that. That is the premise for The Outsider.
Wow.
Pretty intriguing, right?
Well, isn't it? It's interesting because that is such a timely story. It catches the zeitgeist of the culture because we are now in a moment of not knowing what's real anymore, right? It's like, what do you believe? You believe one thing or you believe the other? And sometimes it's based on premises that don't actually exist.
And Cynthia Erivo, great actress who just starred last year in Harriet. She was in Widows. She's been, she's a great singer. She's got all the talent in the world. She plays the local investigators. Even though they're sure Jason Bateman's character did it, they now start to have some doubts and they're thinking like, there's something going on here beyond our normal understanding. So they bring in her character, who's an investigator who has some paranormal skills as well. And she discovers that this isn't the only case of this kind in America, that at least in two other instances, in two other cities, very similar things happen, where someone was absolutely guilty of the crime, except for had an absolutely ironclad alibi. And then it gets really dark and maybe a little supernatural. Think of True Detective. Like, it's kind of done. It looks like True Detective, But if M. Night Shyamalan was doing it, where you're like, there's a twist. I don't know what's going on here, and maybe some of the dreams at night that some people are having aren't dreams.
You're giving way too much. Now I'm
totally you don't know. You don't know. It could be anything. Is there really a boogeyman? Could there actually be such a thing?
May I ask this question? Okay. How many episodes?
There are 10. I've seen 6. And based on the 6, I give it 3.5 stars. The only reason I don't give it 4 stars is it does seem reminiscent of a certain movie. I'm not going to say the name of the movie. And if it doesn't have the different ending or a different resolution, then I'm going to say, well, it's somewhat derivative of a certain movie. But I'm not going to tell you the movie.
I'm watching this tonight.
You can't watch it tonight because it doesn't start till Sunday. But Sunday, Kev,
that's what
I'm in front of your television. I think I could be wrong about that. I believe Sunday night, 8 o'clock HBO. And it's going to be one of those where you're not going to be able to binge watch it. I'm looking at the millennials here in the room. You're going to have to watch it week to week.
All right.
Like we did back in the days when shows like Lost and Love American Style were on the air.
What are they going to do? Do you realize the kind of white people problems, white privilege problems that these two millennials have?
Okay, wine fridge.
That they cannot, these two, have.
Let me tell you something.
Can't sit down and watch everything at the same time.
I am so trained and so used to that and so spoiled by that. As I was watching the episodes that HBO sent me, it goes just like when you're binge watching anything on Netflix or anything like that. You know, when the 4th episode ends, it tells you the next episode is coming in 5. When the 6th episode ended, I started punching my screen. Why are you going to the 7th episode? Why are you stopping now? And then I'm like, oh, they only sent me the 6th episode. Okay. And then I went back, refreshed just in case. Maybe they sent me 4 more. They didn't. Because they know better than that.
So
it's brilliant.
Will you get the rest before the series is over?
Here's what they usually do. Yeah. You know, they sent me the 6, so now that's already taking us up until March in terms of when these are going to run in real time. They'll probably send 7, 8, 9 in the interim. Probably won't, the finale and something like this where there's definitely going to be a whodunit and a conclusion. Probably send it to me 48 hours beforehand saying, please, please don't ruin this for the others. Please don't ruin this for the others. And I won't. I promise.
Now, this is interesting.
Oh, it's
because this
keep the nightlight on.
Is going to run the same, essentially it's going to run in the same period that Game of Thrones was running it. This is their answer. This is their 2020 answer to the 2019 deluge of viewership of Game of Thrones.
Nothing's going to match that in terms of viewership, I think, ever for any show or being a cultural phenomenon. It does speak to the quality of this show. You mentioned the people behind the scenes and the A-list cast that they believe in this show. And it's a great looking series. Clearly spent a lot of money on this. Each episode is about 50 minutes long. So close to an hour-long episode. It does have some of that dark, murky stuff that, you know, sometimes the people get a little angry at because a lot of stuff happens at night in this thing, in the
it's
shadows.
It's called The Outsider. It's on HBO. It's a Stephen King novel. And again, it's Jason Bateman. Is he a dastardly murderer or is he a man wrongly accused? But with a twist and a half here.
Twist and a half. Ben Mendelsohn, who usually plays the villain in movies, plays the good guy local cop. And everybody in this movie is haunted by something. Tragedy in their past, new tragedies. There's this kind of smell of death around everything.
Wow.
And yet some cause for hope and some dark humor. But it's Stephen King. So, you know, I said keep the light on. Actually, turn all the lights off. Because if you turn the night light on, it might illuminate the shadow of something else who stopped by and didn't use the front door.
Just Mercy, this the heavily promoted film, Michael B. Jordan. Right?
Yes.
And Jamie Foxx. And this is about a guy who's on death row who's wrongly convicted.
Yeah, this is a film that we talk about these January releases, and this is just arriving here in Chicago. And I hope it doesn't get lost in all the awards talk and all the other things that are out there, because it's a very strong film. I'm giving it 3 stars. Michael B. Jordan, as we already know, is one of our best younger actors. Mm-hmm. It's based on a real life story set in the late 80s, early 90s. He plays Brian Stevenson, a real life Harvard law grad who could have gone to any firm in the country, but instead went down to Alabama to fight for convicts on death row who maybe shouldn't be on death row. Jamie Foxx plays the real life guy who was down there, who was quickly arrested and convicted for a murder he clearly did not commit. But once the system decided he had committed this murder, he had no hope until Michael B. Jordan's character comes along. What I like about this film a lot, too, is that Jamie Foxx is such a megawatt star, but this film reminds us that he is a really good actor.
Oh, amazing.
He disappears into this character. And Brie Larson, Academy Award winner, she plays the head of the Legal Advocacy Center that she works with Michael B. Jordan. So look at the cast here.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you know where this story's going. Spoiler alert, they don't make movies about wrongly convicted death row inmates who are put to death at the end of the story, usually. They have.
Well, yeah, or...
You know, but that is not the case here. You kind of see where this is going. It strikes all the familiar notes, but it's so well done. And it's such an inspirational story in the end.
I've noticed that there are a number of things popping now. Not just, obviously, this one's coming to the theater. I believe there is a streaming show with the same thematic and a network show coming on that all have the same theme, essentially, of guys who are wrongly convicted and trying to get themselves. It's also touching, again, the spirit of the time, which is... for justice reform and all those kinds of things, that you're finding that there, I find it just very interesting that there are three narrative, one movie and two series that are all touching the same thing.
Yeah, and it may just be, you know, a pure coincidence. These stories are timeless. And look, however you feel about the death penalty, whether, you know, it should be the ultimate form of justice, as we saw in Illinois. There are too many times when the wrong person is put to death and we find out after the case. And that's why there is no death penalty in Illinois any longer. It's not because there was some sort of massive moral movement against it. It was because, wait a minute.
Yeah, we were getting sued into the ground.
And the same thing is happening and happened in other states, as this movie points out, where if 9% roughly of executed death row inmates were actually not guilty, that's horrific.
Yeah. Killing 10% of innocent.
Yeah, exactly. Men. And once you're convicted and you're on death row, it's very, very rare that train ever stops.
Yeah. All right. So, Like a Boss gets a star and a half. The Outsider, the HBO limited series that starts Sunday. Is it Curb Your Enthusiasm coming back Sunday?
Yes, Sunday the 13th. What day? What year is this?
This is the year 2020, and I believe that Sunday will be the 12th.
I believe it premieres the week after that. I know it premieres soon in January.
Okay.
And our friend Jeff Garland told you it's the best story arc they've ever had.
That is true. He did tell us.
Which is amazing when you think of some of the producers and Hamilton-esque things with Lin-Manuel that they did.
Yes. It just between that and Veep, I cannot decide what is the best sitcom of all times.
I believe
January
this...
19th, by the way.
Thank you, Lauren. I thought it was a week from Sunday or a week from Saturday. And in this episode, this story arc, I believe that Larry David is absolutely guilty of murder, and yet somehow has seen 70 miles away. No, that is not true.
All right, hold on. There's an update. I'm sorry, but this has to be discussed because we have not yet discussed this. There is an update on the Harry and Meghan story.
Oh no.
Wild developments today in this. I know what you're thinking.
What?
The royals. What do we care? Well, wait till you find out what just happened.
Okay.
Stay right with us. We'll tell you and we'll discuss. Richard, will you can you stick around for a moment to talk about the royal family?
Sure. Sounds like a movie in the making.
You know, The Crown, that's a fairly successful enterprise, right? For Netflix. And it's getting all these awards, you know, that's Olivia Wilde or Olivia, what's her name? Olivia
Colman.
Thank you. That's a different person. Olivia Colman, you know, won the Golden Globe for playing the Queen. You knew that was going to happen at the Golden Globes because there's a bunch of, you know, foreign press.
It looks
people.
Like something the Queen would have on a shelf anyway.
Yes, exactly. It is very good, but it does tell you about the constraints. I mean, that's the thing that's what the story is about, the constraints of being a royal. Well, the bounds have been broken.
Oh.
And it's a really fascinating story that it's like an escape that Meghan Markle has had to make from England. We'll tell you that story, but first, Kim Gordon's got the WGN news right now. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. It's in Chicago. We got Blackhawks hockey coming your way. Top of the hour. Richard Roper is still here. I have to tell you the story. There are push notifications as though this is like the last scene from the movie Argo. There's an escape from a foreign country where an American is trying to get away to save her life. And she is a duchess. She is Meghan Markle, Northwestern graduate. Who is trying to get back, it appears, now I love this part of the story, for people who may not be familiar with this. So you got Meghan Markle, right? She married Prince Harry. So, and it turned out to be very controversial in England. because A, she's an American. And they didn't like that. Remember, they had that in the middle of the century. They had that Wallace Simpson, who King George, and then he had to leave, and the whole thing it got very, very ugly. And not only is she an American citizen, but she's half African American and half Jewish, which apparently in England is a crime. I did not realize that, but it has caused a problem, and the British tabloids are all over them,
vicious at times.
Yes,
very vicious.
And some of it is pretty racist and
absolutely,
pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
nasty,
very mean spirited, right? So, and Meghan Markle. I mean, I don't know. It's whether you want to say, well, you know, she knew what she was getting into. She was marrying a prince. You knew it was going to be bad, but she literally has gotten them to. They announced 2 days ago that he is renouncing, essentially, his role in the royal family. They're stepping away from the royal duties, as they like to say. Mm. It's that duties.
Jeez.
Then the question was, well, will he still be a prince? Is he still a royal highness? What does that actually mean? Is he giving up the money? Mm. Then yesterday they announced that they want to make their own money. They will step away from the money, which again, it's a significant amount of money, but the Queen's basically got all of it and then just sort of parses it out to the others. Right.
Well, she got the royalties from, she was on that Suits for a couple of years.
Right.
So got those royalty checks coming from that.
Yeah, I would imagine.
A couple hundred bucks every month.
Yeah, I would imagine that's probably not enough. But imagine, you know, if they moved, and they said they're going to split their time between Europe,
okay,
probably England, although they're not saying that for sure, and North America.
Oh, here. Coming here, maybe?
Yes.
Maybe
no, I don't think so, no. But they're actually...
No, they want to live in Canada.
Right. Because he's on the money in Canada or something like that.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Still has a bit of a title. But I thought, now they're going to spend most of their time in L.A., right?
So.
And do you think he'll get deported because he's not an American? It'll be one of those situations where
green
he's
card
like...
maybe for a while.
Have a green... Yeah. Overstays is welcome.
How about that Cutler Cavallari house in Tennessee still for sale in Nashville? They can move right in. Very Meghan. Very Markle.
I am just amazed by this story.
It's crazy.
Because this is actually one of, of all the stupid royal stories that we deal with. Obviously, there have been some great tragic stories, right? Princess Diana and things like that. But of all of the stories of royalty, this probably, it goes right up there with the Wallace Simpson situation.
It's stunning.
The American actress.
People didn't see it coming.
Right. Who ended up marrying the British king who abdicated his throne, which is how this royal family got in. They weren't in line for it. And then next thing you know, here Elizabeth becomes the Queen of England forever.
Yeah.
Our entire lives, she has been the Queen of England. And I just keep wondering, when they said God save the king, I'm just wondering, are we ever going to get back to that?
I don't know. They've had it. They even got their. They took their likenesses out of the wax museum. Did you see that? They ripped them out of there, which are not likenesses anyway. So I was like, yeah, but they're like, oh, you really showed them there, Madame Tussauds. They did. They carted them out.
Like, where are those going to go? Is someone going to take those?
As if they're part. As if Madame Tussauds' wax museum is somehow part of the royal tradition.
They're going to the Hard Rock in Toronto.
Yeah. I mean, they also have Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone as a wax figure in there.
Maybe there's like a burning ceremony. The wax melts back down. Have been banished.
So,
what do you think is going to happen to this crazy couple, though? I feel like there could be turmoil down the road.
Well, I think there's like an entire generation of kids who are like, all their friends are billionaires and don't have to put up with this crap. And they're kind of billionaires, but they don't really have access to it. And they're like, why do we have to even do this anymore? I think this is the sort of the ultimate slacker moment. You're like, dude, it's like too tough being a royal. I'm out.
Well, they said they're going to make their own money. Now, she obviously could return to show business. I don't know if she wants to start auditioning for television. So certainly somebody would put her on a show.
Oh, for sure.
Because she's talented and beautiful, but also because it's Meghan Markle. But what's he going to do? Open like a little coffee shop?
No,
bagels and things and edibles. Princely special.
Gets into the weed industry.
Royal, like get some sort of
His
royal highness.
Highness.
Yeah. Eggs Benedict.
Will be the name of the thing.
We were called Traitors too. I mean, what would he do? What do you think his business would be?
Wait, wasn't he in some kind of military, army, something?
Yeah, they all were at some point. Yeah.
Served with.
Oh, honor, he was in Afghanistan.
Served with
though.
Distinction. Yeah.
Yes.
He really did.
He was actually on the battlefield, which you don't get that a lot. You know, with the royal family, where they're actually on the battlefield. Prince Andrew wasn't on the battlefield, if you know what I mean. Dude, barely could land the helicopter on the flight deck. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think the way they're going to make money, they're going to move back to North America. They're going to end up getting a show on E, become tastemakers, and going down that Kardashian line, sell products, sell beauty.
That would be the royal family's worst nightmare. You know, if they become like the Chrissy Teigen and John Legend.
Yes, that's what they're going to be, like, essentially. Selling beard razors and, you know, other kinds of things.
Little fun videos of the kids trying on daddy's, you know, wigs and
crown.
Like that. The crown.
Right, this is the crown that daddy stole on his way out. Grandma's really mad.
That's what I was thinking, too. Like, do you know, like, are they doing, like, a full inventory every day at the palace? Just to make sure Megan's not slipping. I mean, there's much stuff.
Oh, you well, the tabloids.
They got stuff in storage, right?
All right. Let's find out what's the final check here of the roadways and of the skies. Rocon Show right here on 720 WGN. All right. The big story in Chicago today is the search for the coyote, or coyotes, as it is. Yeah. You got the coyotes that surrounded a Sprint store in the West Loop earlier today. Then you've got the coyote that bit the kid in the head. That's a serious story.
That one was, gosh.
And then you've got, that was up near the Peggy Notarbart Museum on Lakeshore Drive near the Lincoln Park Zoo. And then you had the limping coyote who was trying to find the emergency room at Northwestern Memorial Hospital.
Golly.
Honest to God, that's what was going on.
Wow.
So they are all over the place. Earlier today, we were able to talk to Chris Anker. Chris is a senior wildlife biologist at the Forest Preserves of Cook County and Urban Coyote Research Project. And we asked him, why is it that there are so many of them out there right now? What is it about this season?
In the Chicagoland area, breeding season is around Valentine's Day, believe it or not.
Oh, that's romantic.
It actually peaks around Valentine's Day, which is kind of funny. But whoever is listening to this in the Chicagoland area is within the territory of some coyote family group.
Yeah, they're all over downtown. We've talked about this before. Do we call them dens?
Downtown, but everywhere, yeah.
Packs, dens, what do we call the groups when they're together?
Family groups?
Yeah. Just family groups?
Yeah, we don't...
Because they're not
we
men.
Normally don't get, right. We normally do not get packs building up in our area. Typically, packs, which are extended family groups, so it's probably related females bringing their family groups together, only occurs in areas of the northern Great Lakes where you get 20 inches of snow on the ground for 30 days or more, and then they're able to pack together these family groups, and then they're able to take down adult white-tailed deer. We do not get that kind of snow cover down here, so we don't see formal packs. What we see are the family group, the mated pair, a few of the animals from the previous year, and potentially the young of the year. So at any one time, you may have, you know, 2 to 7, 8 animals running around together.
How long do they mate for? Do they stay together for season after season after season, or is it just sort of one and done?
If nothing else happens, they will mate for life.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's meaning something happens, like one of them dies or the male, another male comes in and challenges the current male?
Typically, the pair will defend the territory. The alpha female is not a docile partner in this. She's very active at defending her territory and her situation.
Classic Chicagoan. Oh, sorry, Kevin, that was your line.
Classic.
unless the insurgent male has a better job. I mean, that's the only reason I confess with the boat, right? In White Claw. All right, so let's talk about the growth of coyotes in, and I'm saying coyotes. I don't know what to say. Coyote, whatever. There seems to be more of them now. Is that true or not true?
Well, more of them now compared to when?
I like a decade ago, let's say.
There are a few more now, but not a lot. We saw our greatest growth during the 80s and early 90s, and since then it's relatively stable. There's been some moving around. But what we have seen is that not so much a change in recently, not so much a change in numbers as we've seen a change in behavior, because the animals are not hunted or trapped in the city of Chicago. What happens is they're intelligent enough to realize that we don't form a threat, and they tend to ignore us.
That's
and the only time that breaks that truly breaks down is when people start feeding. And if there's one thing folks take away from this interview is whatever you do, please do not allow coyotes to be fed. In those cases where there are documented coyote attacks, they've all occurred out west or the provincial parks up in Canada, and every single incident has involved the feeding of the coyotes. Feeding breaks down their normal social behavior, and then you end up with multiple family groups coming to the feed area. So it's just like the pack mentality that we talked about before, where up in northern Wisconsin or the UP of Michigan, these large groups of coyotes will get together and actually take down deer. It breaks down their normal social behavior, and they start identifying young kids as a food source.
We're talking to Chris
Anker. And that has not happened in Illinois up until this point.
We're talking to Chris Anker. He's the senior wildlife biologist for the Forest Preserves of Cook County and Urban Coyote Research Project. How are they going to find the one that bit the kid, though? I mean, will they be out looking for that? Because once that has happened, does that make that animal more dangerous, do you think?
So when an animal breaks through that barrier where it normally has a healthy fear of humans, then you have to start becoming concerned. The last 3 years or so at all of the reported coyote attacks, later on during the investigation, they were able to take DNA of the animal that attacked. And in every case, once the DNA was run, they found out that it was, in fact, a dog, not a coyote. But if it is a coyote, or if it is a dog.
I got to stop you. Wait, what was a dog? They thought when they got the coyote, they thought the coyote was a coyote, but the coyote was a dog?
No. When they ran the DNA off the clothes of the victim, the DNA revealed that it was, in fact, was not a coyote, but it was a dog.
I see. So now that's
and I'm not challenging the authenticity of the folks that witnessed this or who were attacked, but I'm just saying the last 3 or 4 years, the people who have come forward saying that they were attacked by coyotes, when the DNA was run mm-hmm. on the clothes that they were wearing,
right, got it.
It became obvious that it was, in fact, a dog. Mm. And then when the dogs were found, they were able to match the DNA and find that, yes, this is, in fact, the dog that bit this individual.
Right, because a coyote looks very different than a dog when you're up close, and they move differently. Their ambulation
Absolutely.
Is totally different.
Yep. Yes, they are.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them in the city a couple of times, and there's no mistaking them for a dog.
No. No.
Unless you're really an idiot.
Now, every couple of years, we'll have folks who will find a coyote pup in the woods and take it home thinking that it's a puppy German Shepherd, and they'll start raising it, and then they take it to the veterinarian, and the vet says, wait a minute, you don't have a dog here, you've got a coyote.
Right, because they will not make good pets. But once they get old enough, they're not trainable like a dog, but they're super smart, right?
Absolutely. You know, not only is it illegal to have a coyote as a pet, it is very foolish to have a coyote as a pet, because their means of interacting with everything around them is to snap, is to bite. And eventually that's what it turns into. Even the people who raise it, eventually they will begin to snap and bite, because that's how they're designed.
They're wild.
That's how they're wired. They're wired to snap and bite.
Chris Anker, senior wildlife biologist, the Forest Preserves of Cook County and the Urban Coyote Research Project. That is fascinating about the confusion between a coyote bite mm-hmm. and a dog bite, because the point is a coyote, there are very few dogs that are big like a coyote. A coyote is like a Great Dane in terms of when, you know, like how yeah. tall they are, you know, how tall their back is. You know, that's how you measure a dog, right? By the back as opposed to the head. And they're gigantic. and they move. They don't, you know, like a when a dog runs, it you know, it's like a racehorse, you know, two paws out, mm-hmm. and then the paws come up through the back. That's not, these guys trot, and they have a totally different, you know, gait, and they just, I mean, there's no way that you, it's like confusing a shark and a dolphin.
Yeah, they're right? pretty much stalking the whole time.
Yeah.
They just got this very sneaky behavior.
That little puppy story is kind of scary. It reminds me, I was once on the Serengeti, and I found this adorable little kitty cat, and I took it home. A couple years later, I had to bring it over to Siegfried Roy. 800 pounds. Never stopped eating.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you're a tabby after all, or a jellicle cat.
Bigger and bigger. I thought that about a pug, and it turned out it's the wrong thing. All right. Well, that does it for this day of Broadcast Insolence. We got Chicago Blackhawks hockey. It's coming your way. And let's point out something here. This is, I'm in must-win territory right here, Kevin Powell.
It feels that way, bro. They need it.
Yeah. So we will be back here tomorrow for a Friday. Very exciting Friday on this program. We'll talk a little bit about what happened in the Hawks game last night and then all the other stuff. And a Knarble wagon will roll. It seems like, the first week of January. Well, the Knarble wagon's half off because all the restaurants are half off in January anyway. So we'll be doing that with you tomorrow. And we hope you've enjoyed this today. It was informative and entertaining, too, because that's all we're really striving for here at the Rokan Show. Chicago Blackhawks hockey is on the air in 2 minutes.